second string to Shelley is a pretty nice duty.
Oh, tell me about it.
Discovering new things. So no, nobody can grab a 400 or 500 page bill and read it, even a Washington analyst, and really understand all the implications.
There's a lobbyist.
The lobbyist has an opinion. Go.
I hope so.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure he didn't come here to warm his seat.
Well, I think he came here to see if there was any news on the stimulus. Stimulus money has arrived.
I'd like to call the meeting to order of the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. And we are, it is Wednesday, March 11th, 5:34 p.m. by my watch, March 11th. We're in the Community Center Sierra Room at 851 East Williams Street in Carson City, Nevada. The Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization is pleased to make reasonable accommodation for members of the public who are disabled and wish to attend the meeting. If special arrangements for the meeting are necessary, please notify the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization staff in writing at 3505 Buddeye Way, Carson City, or P. Pittenger at ci.carson-city.nv.us, or easier to call Patrick at 887-2355, and I forget the five, what's the five-digit number, Patrick?
30396.
Okay. The city has gone to a five-number extension now instead of four. So if you have the four digit number, throw it away, and there are all staff now has five numbers. For more information regarding any of the items listed on the agenda, please contact the MPO staff. Additionally, the agenda with all supporting material is posted on the, and this is a new addition, on the CAMPO website at www.carsonareampo.com. Now, as far into our agenda, item A, roll call and determination of a quorum.
Chairperson Desjardins.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Eswine.
Here.
Member Aldean.
Here.
Member Carpenter.
Here.
Member Kroll.
Here.
Member Foltz.
Here.
Member Mallory.
Here.
Member Taylor.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. Item B, approval of minutes. We have in our packet the February 11, 2009 meeting minutes. Do we have any comments on those minutes? Anybody have any changes, additions? Anybody in the audience have any Any comments on those, if you've seen them? Guess not. Okay, if that's the case, could I have a motion to approve the minutes of February 11th?
Second.
Okay, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Any opposed? None? Okay, minutes are approved. Modification of agenda. This is the a tentative agenda or schedule for the meeting. Campbell reserves the right to take items in a different order to accomplish business in the most efficient manner. Patrick, are the agenda items in order?
No changes from staff, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Item D, public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the Metropolitan Planning Organization may approach the podium and speak on matters related to the MPO, but not on items agendized for this meeting. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chair to calendar the matter for a future MPO meeting. Of course, these are held monthly, the second Wednesday of each month at 5:30 p.m. No action may be taken upon a matter raised under this item of the agenda until the matter itself has been specifically included on an agenda as an item upon which action may be taken. Does anybody from the public then wish to comment at this time? Anyone? Okay, thank you. We'll move on to item E, disclosures. Any member of the member of the MPO that may wish to explain any contact with the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the MPO. We have anyone that wants to share anything with us? Okay, a lot of items will come up during the course of our discussion. Okay, with that, let's move on to item F, public meeting items, F1. Our first item is information regarding the distribution of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, commonly known as stimulus, to member counties. This is an info-only item. Keith, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Keith Pearson. I'm the transit coordinator for Carson City Public Works. Today I'm here to give you information regarding the distribution of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act to member counties. When I wrote the agenda item, these were preliminary numbers announced by the FTA, and since then they are actual numbers now. The amount of money that Campo is going to receive is $1,092,274, and based on our Campo distribution policy, the funds will be apportioned to Carson City at 87% and Douglas County at 13%, which is $950,278 to Carson City and $141,996 to Douglas County. These funds are considered Federal Transit Administration 5307 funds. However, they are only allowed to be spent on capital improvements. And additionally, these funds are also 100% funded by FTA. Basically, that summarizes how we're going to distribute the funds, and if you guys have any questions, I will entertain them.
Member Aldi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith, I just had a question about whether or not the stimulus money can be used as a match.
Towards
other, obviously, no. With 5307 funds, it's a 50-50 match, 50% reimbursement.
Correct.
Is there any way of utilizing the stimulus money as a match in connection with any of our other proposed projects?
You can mix the funds, but the strings attached to that are it has to be funds that haven't been awarded to us yet. Meaning if we have something in our TIP from fiscal year 2008, say, and we've received 5307 money for that, we can't substitute these funds for those funds. We can.
No, I'm referring to the local match, though. we can't use stimulus dollars to satisfy the local match.
Oh, to local match for to, okay. against 5307 right. funds or operating?
Right.
No, we
okay.
cannot.
Oh, darn. All right.
Okay. No, the one cardinal rule is generally you can't match federal with federal.
Yeah, okay. All right. Even if it's unusual. I mean, this is, you know, unusual federal funding. This is not something that happens every day. But, okay. All right. Thanks, Keith.
You're welcome.
Keith, while you're there at the podium beforehand, several of us were talking. There's quite a bit of detail in our packet that FDA has provided. However, there's nothing about when the clock starts ticking. And I think that ought to be a rather important item to all of us, unless perhaps I'm missing that.
No, it's actually obligated when they apportion it.
Or yeah, it's now, as Keith said, these are actual numbers. They've actually been in the Federal Register now. So now that the funds have been apportioned, the 180-day and 365-day clocks have actually started ticking.
Yeah, I think it was March 5th or 6th, was it?
Yeah, just in the last week they published the actual numbers. We knew about them, but they're final now.
They're final.
Well, then that's all the more reason we need to move with expediency now that the clock's ticking.
Yes.
Okay. Member Oldie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Keith, I'm assuming we're not. One of the things we're going to be spending this money on is the acquisition of a new low-level bus, and I'm assuming that will not cause us to exceed our spare ratio?
Correct.
Okay. All right. That's all I need.
To clarify for Jack, jump around Carson City RTC, not as Campo. RTC will be buying a low-floor bus, not Campo.
No, that's true. But in the guidelines that are attached to our packet, it specifically says that you cannot
use these funds, these stimulus dollars, for the acquisition of a new vehicle if that vehicle is being added to your, is going to cause you to exceed your spare ratio. That's why I asked the question.
Yeah, I actually saw in one of the question and answers submitted to the recovery that you could actually contact the FTA if you will be endangered of, you know, exceeding your spare ratio, and they may accept it anyways.
We're not, and just so everybody knows, the spare ratio is if you need to have 10 buses on the road at any given time, how many extra spare buses you have in case there is something that goes down. For the most part, these vehicles that we're acquiring, we have two arriving next week actually for Carson City. They are replacement for vehicles that have reached the end of their useful life. The reason why they don't want you to exceed the spare ratio is that if someone has a fleet of 500 buses and they have 50 spare, they don't want you to go buy 50 more just for the sake of it.
They want that's not discourage hoarding. Right.
Yes, I don't think we have any danger with either in Douglas County or in Carson City of that.
Mayor Crowe, what does the term obligate mean?
Basically, the term obligate means that the money has been already. It's already.
Contract has been ordered, is it not?
Yes.
No?
I think that.
If I may, Mr. Chair, no, obligate simply means that what you have done is you have identified a project through the Federal Management Information System to which those funds will be spent upon. So you have not spent the money necessarily, you have obligated the money.
So once once the grant is awarded, we have to go in through the federal system and get the grant awarded through our electronic system. Once the grant is awarded, that does constitute obligation. So that 180-day clock, for example, isn't as critical as you might think, because obviously we're going to go get that whole grant awarded as soon as possible. So we aren't living under the threat of that 180-day clock as perhaps end up May for some of the roadway projects that they have 120-day clock for. However, we are still proceeding to get the money spent anyway. We're not going to take advantage of any flexibility. We want to go out there and spend the money and stay true to the spirit of this bill and go and actually spend the money, not just get it awarded in an electronic system and sit on it.
But the actual method of doing that is to define what you're going to use the funds for and apply for the grant, and that's how it actually gets done?
Yes, that is correct. We work through systems called Team and Echo with the Federal Transit Administration that Keith and I are the ones that handle that, and the NDOT has a whole staff of people in the transit section that do that as well for their funds. But in this case, it'll be us applying for the funds and then the FTA reviews the application and approves it, where we have to list these are the projects that we're going to spend the money on. It can be amended in the future if so necessary. If Douglas County were to say they were going to buy a bus and in 2 months they change their mind and we need to alter it, it is possible for us to do that as well.
And one last question is, does that then the respective RTCs will make that grant application through an amendment to their TIP?
Actually, CAMPO staff is responsible for making a single grant application in representation of the Carson RTC and Douglas County. That is CAMPO's role to apply for those funds on behalf of those agencies. And indeed, the next item on your agenda is a modification of the TIP, which is a separate, also required action in order to make this, in order to be eligible for the funds. Not only do you have to have the grant award, you also have to have it in your TIP. Separate action, though.
Does anyone else on CAMPO here have a question? I know this is rather complicated, and I think all of this will unfold as we go along. Anybody else? Anybody from the audience have a question of any of the experts here with us? No one? Okay. I guess that's it for item F1. Thanks, Keith.
Thank you.
That is a an item for information only, and I'm, again, as Patrick pointed out, there are some items coming up in our agenda to move this particular process along, but I think all of us here want to get that money in our pockets as quick as humanly possible. And I think, at least as long as I'm sitting in this chair, I want the public to know that we're going to get every dime that we can that is authorized us. And I think, and maybe, Dennis, you can help us on this. There obviously is at some point in time that there's going to be some extra money. I suspect not everyone is going to meet the requirements for spending the stimulus money, and at some point that's going to be probably reallocated. And do you have any information on that?
Specifically at the present time, no, but I would support those comments. We are required under the American Recovery Reinvestment Act to obligate at least 50% of our money, the state level, within 120 days. And then other states also have the 180 days for transit, et cetera, et cetera. And typically what happens is the money that has not been obligated by the other states within the time limit given will be recollected for what they call redistribution back to those states that, one, have in fact met the requirements of obligation within the time limit given, and as well as can demonstrate a good faith effort that they have additional projects they can in fact spend additional money on. But at present, we don't know how many states that's likely to be or what the level of money might be going back into the pot for redistribution.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I may. Sure. And one thing I just want to make sure that's clear, not only for this item but for future items, is that in the case of the FHWA, roadway funds, those are distributed first to the state, and then some of that is sub-allocated to large urban areas. In the case of these transit funds that we're discussing, they are allocated directly to the urbanized areas. So in the Federal Register, it says the Carson urbanized area will receive this money, and we are dealing directly with the federal government as compared to going through the state for that source of funds. Okay.
Member Aldi.
Thank you. Patrick, I guess my question is, and Dennis, maybe you can chime in on this. I mean, with respect to these transit funds, as you just stated, the money comes directly to the MPO. However, with respect to the stimulus dollars that are going to be allocated to roadway improvement projects, we did not receive a sub-allocation, even though we are, and I was going to take this up later in the meeting under RTC, but, we seem to be, we're neither fish nor fowl. I mean, sometimes we're rural, sometimes we're urbanized, and I'm feeling a little slighted here, and we can perhaps take that up when we agendize, we are convene as RTC.
If I may, that would be most appropriate under item F2, which is the next one on the agenda. I know you're raring to go, and so am I.
That's right. I'm introducing your item for you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Several things were discussed after I asked whether there were any public comments. So, again, I'll ask for any public comments that may come forth on this information item. Okay, there is none. Let's move on to item F2. Item F2 is action to authorize the opening of a 30-day public comment period for a proposed amendment to the Transportation Improvement Program, commonly known as a TIP. Again, this is a formal action item, and Dan Dengis, it's floor is yours.
Thank you. Dan Dengis, Carson City Public Works. As was alluded to earlier, in anticipation of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funds, the TIP, the Transportation Improvement Program, needs to be amended. As with any federal dollars, they have to be listed in the approved TIP before that project can go forth. And this is an action item to open up the required 30-day comment period. But just to go into a little more detail about what's actually being proposed in the table, as Keith mentioned, we're set to receive approximately $1.1 million for transit projects. And as kind of was alluded to before, at this point in time, we don't anticipate any roadway projects. However, when this table was drafted, we weren't really sure what the status of that was. And so basically, there's about 10 projects that are listed in there under roadway improvements that were deemed as eligible for this type of funding from Carson City's perspective. And again, this is something that will be, I guess, discussed further at the RTC meeting. But at this point in time, we don't anticipate really any funding. Also, would you note, under some of the transit improvements for Douglas County, most all the funding sources is through ARRA. However, there are three projects that are 5309. Those are not new, but the reason they are highlighted is during the last TIP amendment we did, we combined all the 5309 funds under one category, and basically we just wanted to separate out the previous 5309 funding that was allocated and the newer funds received during the last TIP amendment. So just to reiterate, if anyone had a question, that is not new funding.
Okay, let's go ahead and open it up to questions from members of CAMPO.
Do you have any?
Anybody? Member Carpenter?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, when we open this up to the 30-day comment, it's only these highlighted projects that are going to be up for discussion?
That's correct. And as I mentioned, with the roadway projects, you know, we're still kind of up in the air on that. But when this is brought back, we'll obviously have a better idea, and it's likely that there might not be any of those projects listed in what's brought back to be approved for the final amendment.
Thank you.
Sure. Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Pittenger.
If I may, I just want to add one thing. Just to make sure it's clear that any entity, any, you know, Carson City, Douglas County, Lyon County, can always ask that a project be amended into the TIP. In this case, Carson City, as a city, has requested that the 10 roadway projects here be funded through the stimulus package. And like Dan said, because it's still up in the air and has yet to be finally decided, we needed to put them in here so that in the case the funding was received, they were in there. We will have the ability to adjust this during the 30-day comment period. We'll have to come back to you for final approval. And that's what Carson City added, and down at the bottom, of course, you can see the Douglas County has as was previously identified, they have, I believe, $142,000 in ARRA funds, and they provided the list of desires to spend that money. So their desires were expressed there as well. But during this 30-day comment period, if there are any, if Douglas County or Carson City or Lyon County were to get stimulus funds, all that can be amended prior to the final approval by CAMPO following that conclusion of the 30-day comment period. So it's our required federal process to have that comment period, but we wanted to bring it to you, show you what was being put in there initially. We'll get through the process and bring it back to you for final approval, amended as necessary. Just so the process is clear.
Yeah, I would also note, just to piggyback on what Patrick said, that we did indeed contact Lyon and Douglas County to let them know this was coming.
Vice Chair Eschwein?
Patrick, what would be
the process for Lyon County to propose projects for inclusion on the TIP?
Simply ask us to add it. The required projects to be included on the TIP, the general rule is if it's got federal USDOT money, it's got to be on here, FTA, FHWA. Also, if you are widening an arterial roadway, no matter if it's federal or not, and providing capacity that's of regional significance, you also have to put that on the TIP. If for some reason the state were to spend state-only money on US 50 to widen that, we'd still have to put it in here, even though there's no federal money. However, if there's anything else that the Lyon County would like to add here, they're certainly open to place it on the TIP. You just need to contact us, and like I said, the book is open for the next 30-plus days.
Okay, thank you.
Patrick, this raises the question, when are we going to start the 30-day comment period? So these gentlemen know, because obviously.
Well, assuming that that you approve the initiation of this comment period for the TIP, I believe we'll submit it to the newspaper tomorrow for a formal publication. We'll confirm when the when it'll be in the paper next Tuesday.
Probably Tuesday. Yeah.
Next Tuesday, it'll first be able to appear in the paper on Tuesday. 3-day comment period will start then, and we will have a formal public comment period that will formal public meeting,
yes,
during the comment period that will also be noticed as well per NRS during that 30-day period. So approximately next Tuesday till 30 days after.
Mayor Crow?
If one were to add up the projects under the FT, the transit section up here, would you come to $1 million some odd?
If you're referring to the stimulus dollars, that is. No, that is not correct. We're $450,000 short, which will be detailed in a later item when we get to the Carson City RTC section. The reason why we're short is because over half of the $950,000 is included in this. But we are, well, one of the items on here that, like I said, we'll discuss during RTC, is the $60,000 for the design and determination of a location of a transit center for JAC in downtown Carson City. And pending the results of that expenditure, we may want to, we're leaving just under half of the money flexible for the moment if we decide to indeed proceed with that downtown transfer point. If that comes to fruition, we will then amend that in. If not, we may possibly use that money for buses. So, indeed, it does not add up to 1.1. It's about 1.1 minus 450.
And help me understand, again, and I apologize if I should know the answer to this, but help me understand where are we in that process of deciding whether or not we should have a downtown transportation center and things of that nature? I mean, I'm a little concerned. That's why I asked the questions earlier as to what it meant by obligated and who was going to be making the TIP improvement. And I'm a little concerned about the timing here of what's going on, and also the process of how we're going to be arriving at these decisions as to how do you spend this money. And I like the money too, but I'd like to know what the process is for coming to a reasonable conclusion as to what it should be spent on. And if we've already done that drill, You just have to tell me that.
No.
But if we're supposed to be doing that drill, then I want to be prepared for that.
No, Mayor, is the one unfortunate thing about having the Campo meeting before the RTC meeting, frankly, and admittedly, because this, when we get to the RTC, we're going to talk about specifically how does Carson City want to spend the $950,000 that is available to it. This represents, the $500,000, the initial $500,000, more than 50% that we would initially look to expend. And then, but we are keeping ourselves flexible because, for example, we have a listing of a vehicle here for $180,000. If we get it for $160,000, we're not going to let the $20,000 go to waste. We are 100% sure that months from now we are going to be amending this to make sure that we capture all those dollars. But you're indeed right. When we get to the RTC meeting, you will have a more detailed discussion of what you use it for. And the good thing is that this Campo TIF is still flexible. If we get to the RTC meeting later this evening and RTC decides to go in a different direction without spending these funds, then this TIF will be amended prior to final approval, and it will reflect the desires of the RTC.
And we can do that in this 30-day period.
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Member Aldean.
And this is probably a rhetorical question. I really don't expect an answer, but I am still grappling with the fact that, on the one hand, as an urbanized area, we received a direct allocation for transit-related projects. But, as RTC, even though, we are basically a subset of Campo, we are sitting in an urbanized area, we are treated differently than Washoe and Clark with respect to receiving funds for roadway projects. And I know that we're going to touch on that at the RTC meeting, but I'm a little confused by why, on the one hand, we're recognized as an urban area for purposes of transit. On the other hand, our urbanized nature is kind of disregarded with respect to receiving a sub-allocation for roadway improvement money. And if somebody can enlighten me, that would be great.
Well, I'm not going to try to explain the federal government or some of our elected officials at the congressional level for their wisdom in this. But just to make sure it's clear to everyone, it was always discussed that MPOs would receive a sub-allocation. And indeed, the decision was made to give Nevada as a whole just over $200 million, and that 30% would be sub-allocated to the MPOs, and that the MPOs would further have these funds, 100% federal flexibility to use it for roads or buses if they wish. They could flex it, and they are not subject to the 120-day clock that the NDOT is subject to. So it's a wonderful thing for MPOs, but at the last minute, if you're a small MPO, you don't care about this too much, but there is a difference in the federal eyes of everyone that hits 50,000 with the density becomes an MPO. When you hit 200,000, you become what's called a TMA. It's an extra level of requirements and funding for MPOs that hit 200,000. When you become you're a transportation management agency, and an additional set of rules applies to you. You are subject to additional audits. You are subject to performing congestion management processes. And so there was this previous delineation, but none of us knew that at the last second that delineation would be used to separate the bigger MPOs from the smaller ones. So, indeed, we were left out, and we were left at the mercy of NDOT, frankly, because we did not get a direct sub-allocation. So the out of that $201 million, after about 50 goes to Clark and Washoe counties for their MPOs, there is a pot of statewide monies, and it is up to the state to decide how to distribute those monies within the state with great flexibility. And so that process is not the fault of anyone but our legislators. And if Dennis Taylor wants to comment on the state process, I'll feel free to yield the floor here.
Member Taylor, I was going to ask you anyway to comment. Okay.
Well, I'd like to save that to tell the RTC, but I will do this. We are working with NACO, Nevada Association of Counties, and have been for quite some time asking them to help solicit projects. And I'd like to add on Member Patrick's comments to Member Eswine's earlier, your projects within those metropolitan planning area boundaries, urbanized area boundaries, Patrick's absolutely right. Ask Patrick whether or not you can mend those in. With respect to those projects outside of those boundaries, we've asked NACO to work with the counties to provide us a list, and indeed we are still collecting that list. Now, Patrick, in fact, has given us a list of his projects, and I think, what was that, at least a month ago. Currently, those projects from Patrick as well as our rural counties are making their way through NDOT to ensure that we have the necessary certifications to make sure that the right-of-way and utilities are set and done, to make sure it is, in fact, a doable project. And, in fact, even if we throw, if it's a $25 million project and we can only get $5 million to it, where's the other $20 million come from? And what we're trying to do is be very, very careful because, you know, having projects and not having the money is one thing. Having money and saying we have projects that, in fact, aren't ready, that's a whole different story altogether. So that's where we're at right now. And when we get to the RTC agenda on it with a G2 later on, I think, you know, we can have a more detailed discussion about the process and what we're struggling with, quite frankly. It's a lengthy process. It's a difficult process. And they, you know, a lot of things have changed since what we heard back in December. And until now, just like Patrick said, we thought at one time MPO, there was a mid-category for a sub-allocation for MPOs up to 200,000, and that disappeared in the final bill. So, and I don't think any of us anticipated that happening. But so that's what I'll give for right now, and we'll discuss it in more detail next agenda item, next board meeting.
Dennis, I wanted to ask you further on this. Obviously, meeting the environmental requirements are also part of the pie. I don't know the current staffing and situation at NDOT. Are you folks ready to, because the environmental stuff can be rather complicated and timely.
Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely correct. We asked this question early on that with ERA funding, ARRA, Reinvestment and Recovery Act, whether or not some of the federal requirements were going to be relaxed to help the states meet those deadlines that were going to be imposed upon us. No, there are no federal requirements have been relaxed at all. We still have ADA, we still have certifications, we still have environmental. Now, that being said, I can tell you right now, we are working very, very hard because on the top of everything else that we're trying to do, meet our obligation limitation, which to spend all of our federal dollars we normally have to spend so we don't turn any back. Now we've got this additional pot of money we've got to spend that has a lot of strings attached. Matter of fact, today we had a conference call with our MPOs and our partners to discuss the reporting requirements. They're huge. The number of jobs created, what did it do for the economy, what the project was, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we're working hard to answer the question. We didn't get any more staff, Mr. Chairman. We just got more work, but we're going to get there, I guarantee you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other members have comments or questions? Also, don't go away yet, Dan. How about those in the audience? Have any questions of Dan or Dennis, Patrick, anyone that can provide some answers? Okay, looks like we don't have any further questions. So with that, I'd like to entertain a motion on F2.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a move to authorize the opening of the 30-day public comment period for a proposed amendment to the Transportation Improvement Program, TIP. Fiscal impact of $1,092,247 in Federal Transit Administration funds. The amount of Federal Highway Administration funds is unknown at this time.
Okay, I have a motion. Can I have a second?
Second.
Okay, Mayor Kroll, a second. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries unanimously.
Okay, let's go to item F3. And this is an action to amend the Campo policy on public comment process or proposed fare increases and service reduction. Again, this is a formal action item, and I think, Patrick, you have this one.
Yes. I'll take this one because I wrote the original, but for a brief background, now that Campo is the designated recipient and grantee of Federal Transit Administration funds, we are almost done expending the funds that were originally granted to Campo through NDOT. NDOT had been the processor of those funds, and we're almost done with those funds. But as we moved into the becoming a designated recipient grantee ourselves, we do have to provide a number of certification and assurances on an annual basis to the federal government, and we are now subject to triennial reviews/ audits by the federal government. And they were last year, about a year and a half ago, and we went through that audit along with NDOT. Came along, Jim Mallory's staff. I can't remember if he was there personally, but at the time, Jim Mallory's staff came and held our hand a little bit through our first audit, and I'm happy to report that we only got dinged on one minor thing, and that was that we didn't have a policy to notify the public in the case of a fare increase or a service decrease. Now, the good news is it wasn't a bad ding because nobody in the Campo area had ever decreased service or increased fares. So it was just a matter of, well, adopt a policy for future use if and it ever happens. Well, it has now come to pass that a service decrease has been proposed, and the public comment period is already underway for that, and it is being done by Douglas County right now. Douglas County is having financial difficulties like many governmental entities at this time, and it was the first test of that policy that I wrote and was approved just over a year ago now by Campo. And while going through that with Douglas County staff, some of the things that maybe I had inadvertently assumed to be how business should be done were inadvertently not spelled out clearly in that document. And we have now worked with Douglas County, and they are indeed, they did put notices on the buses. They did have a public meeting just earlier this week. You might have seen notice of in the paper. And they are doing, the things that they should be doing. But because, we had, yet another set of eyes from Douglas County that hadn't been around when we initially did it, it was pointed out a couple of things that were missing. And this policy is just an update of that to make it much clearer to put things in here to say that you should put a notice in the paper, for example, just as we, as I mentioned, we're doing for the 30-day comment period for the TIP. You should also do that if you have if you're proposing to cut service. In the case of DART, for example, instead of being 10 round trips in their fixed route, there will only be 3. So it is a significant cut. We'll also do things like put a notice on the Campo website, and we ask that whomever it may be, whether it be either be Carson City or Lyon in the future or Douglas, provide Campo staff with the notice so that we can publish our website to assist in the notification process. We'd still have the notices on the buses, and we just spelled out that at least one public meeting would be held. I think it's fairly straightforward, just for clarification purposes. That's about it. And Douglas County, by the way, has had a chance to review this as well.
Okay, Joel, I assume you've looked this over and have no further comments?
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's open it up to Campo members. Okay, Jim.
I'd like Jim to Howard. Ask, thank you very much. I'd like to ask Patrick, instead of looking at a policy for proposed fare increases and service reductions, why don't you look at a policy for proposed fare changes and service changes? Mm-hmm. So that it doesn't, if you reduce the fare or you increase the service, you're covered under the policy.
Well, the reason why not is because, number one, we're not required to, but number two, this is the federal government sees this, I believe, in a way that you are you're protecting the citizenry, and you are giving an opportunity to comment if something adverse is happening to them. The question was asked of us, was this policy followed when Route 21X, jointly funded over Spooner Summer, was put into place? And the answer was no, that policy was not, because it was for service reductions. If there is an opportunity to lower fares, we don't see the need to warn people that something good is happening to them. For example, there is now not a fare for senior citizens riding the JAC system if they are willing to get a free bus pass and show it. I think that's a benefit to our community and senior citizens in particular. And I don't think that we've had any complainers riding the bus for free. So we didn't see a need to go to great lengths to warn the customers that something good is happening to them.
I know, Patrick, but what I think I'm saying is if it's addressed, you've got your base covered. Even if it's addressed in such a way that you say you do not go through a process to reduce fares, then you've got your bases covered that way. And also, it's a feather in your hat, and it's a PR piece. If you can do something better, increase the service or reduce the fare, and have a process to let everybody know that you're doing that.
Yeah, we could certainly edit this and bring it back at the next meeting to say this is how you should promote yourself if you're doing something good, at a minimum. I have no problem saying that something good's happening.
I think those are very good comments. We can elaborate on a little further. Member Aldine?
The question I guess I have, I think it is a good idea, Jim, because sometimes we don't spend a lot of time tooting our own horn, and emphasizing the positive. We seem to be focusing on the negative these days. And the question is whether or not, how burdensome it would be to staff to hold a special meeting, to advise people of reductions in fares or expansion of service area. The expansion of service area, I think, would be most critical, because people need to be advised that the routes have been changed, in a way that's going to benefit the riding public. I just had a couple of clerical changes. I'm sorry, Patrick. Under 2A, policy 2A, if you could just add a D after propose, notice the proposed service change. And then under subparagraph 2C, midway down, you reference a previous paragraph A. It should be lowercase. There is no capital A. That's fine. Thank you.
Okay, out to my left, Member Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Shelley, thank you for pointing those out, because I was going to, cover you on that. Yeah, okay. Patrick, I too want to chime in and say that I think that if we're going to have something good like free rides for seniors, that needs to be. We need to get the word out, and that would be good. If we're going to expand our area, I think we should get the word out. And to make it even worse, I think that you should send PSAs out to the radio and TV and print to see if we can get some free advertising, because I would like to have the public noticed at a greater level that these changes, whether they're negative or positive changes, I want them to be noticed more liberally to get their feedback. If in this policy here, what you're saying is that we're going to put a notice in the public notice section of the newspaper, and I don't read those. And we're going to put notices on the buses. And so then at that point, and I don't use the buses. So I wouldn't know that this was going to happen. So either I start riding the buses or, something. But we need to get the word out to the public that these changes are happening, and they might just think that this is a good thing and they want to come and make their public comments. So I would like that addition to the policy.
Mr. Chair, if I may, and just sure. So everybody knows, this would only be documenting what we already do. There was a nice front page article in the Nevada Appeal, for example, about our free rides for senior citizens, because I went and met with the editorial board of the Nevada Appeal, who was gracious enough to have me. And they not only met with me and discussed it with me, they put an article on the front page the next day, or maybe it was 2 days later. So we'd be happy to document what we already do, Member Carpenter.
Okay, thank you. Member Foltz, and then Mayor Kroll.
Patrick, I just wanted to confirm that the county's on the right track with the process that they're doing at this time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This would only apply for future activities. You know, we appreciate Douglas County's comments and you know, poking holes in what I wrote a year ago.
Sorry about that.
No, I appreciate that. This will be better because of it. And like I said, yeah, Douglas County already has done the, you know, has had their public meeting. They have had flyers on the buses, and we have already discussed it. And while we didn't get a notice on the Campo website beforehand, you know, we are aware and we have talked about it with it. So this will apply to any future activities.
One other question. In the first part of the proposed new policy, it basically defines what the governing board is. But there are a number of locations where it refers to variously the governing board and the governing body. Is that intentional, or should those
no.
all be the same?
No, you're just as good as poking holes as your comrades, I think. No, that was just that was only me writing this at the last minute before sending it out. I'd be happy to fix that editorially as well.
Dear Mayor Kroll.
Maybe this goes to Joel, Patrick. Under paragraph 2A, it says there's a 30-day comment period, and then in the middle of the comment period or sometime during the comment period, there will be a public hearing. Am I reading that right?
Yes, that is the intent.
Help me understand the efficacy of a public hearing and when comment haven't closed yet. I mean, if I want to write a comment, I mean, I want them to be heard at a public hearing, I think. I mean, that's what I think that the hearing is all about. Now, maybe I'm missing what we're doing here.
Well, and I believe we call it a public meeting. It's not technically a hearing. And the theory behind this is that after the public comment period ends, all, you know, for example, if Carson RTC were to propose a service decrease or a fare increase, and we went through this process, at the end of the 30-day comment period, city staff would need to document all comments received. And the important thing is that whether someone sends a letter or a fax or an email on day two, or if they show up at a public meeting that's held on day 13 and writes a comment at that point, the comments are all equal. You don't have to come to the meeting to make a comment. It's just an additional opportunity, in addition to letter and fax and email and everything else. It's an additional opportunity to submit comments and to meet with staff and ask questions. That's the intent of the public meeting, is that it doesn't make you any better or worse if you come to the meeting or if you write us a letter. All of those comments will be provided to the governing body, board, of whomever it is, on an equal basis, whether, you know, we will report, you know, this many positive comments, negative comments, and it doesn't matter if it was submitted at the meeting or the week before by email.
Okay, thank you, Patrick. Any other comments? Okay, how about opening up to the public? Public have any comments on this dissertation? None. Patrick, what I'd like to do, and let's see if we're bringing this back next month. Would that cause us any problems? Give you a little more quiet time to massage us with the comments from Campo.
No such thing as quiet time, but yes, it would give us time to reflect the comments this evening and bring it back next time. That's fine.
Okay. So with that, this item will not be acted on, but will be brought back next month. Okay, item F4, and this is an information item only, and it is information regarding a request by Lyon County to expand the Campo boundaries. Again, Patrick, this is yours.
Okay, well, I will review a little briefly about what I have and let Member Estwine discuss further as the representative from Lyon County. But for brief background, after the year 2000 census, Campo was formed. And after every census, urbanized area boundaries are adjusted across the country. And in our case, after the 2000 census, a new urbanized area was created, one that is includes Carson City, but also small portions of Douglas and Lyon counties. Now, the urbanized area does not necessarily have to be contiguous with the metropolitan planning area. The metropolitan planning area can be larger than the urbanized area as required. The urbanized area is the minimal required. In the case of Douglas County, for example, there are two kind of peninsulas of urbanized area that stick into Douglas County, and Douglas County at the time specifically indicated a desire to have the metropolitan planning area be no larger than that which was the minimal required by the census. In the case of Lyon County, it was a very small, it was a portion of Mound House, and it wasn't even all of Mound House, but an agreement at that time made the planning area boundary include basically all of Mound House, all the way to the turnoff to Virginia City, because that was seen as a logical cutoff point at the time. Now, obviously, we're in a very slow development time currently, but much development did occur after 2000 up to this point. And recently, on February 26th, prior to then, I was contacted by Dennis Stark, the county manager of Lyon County, with a request to put this on the agenda, which I discussed with the chairman, and we have it here. But subsequent to that, Mr. Stark did transmit a letter to the chairman through me requesting that we look at the further expansion of the Campo boundary, the planning area boundary, into Lyon County, and that is attached to your item F4. We attached not only the letter dated February 26th, but also a map transmitted, thank you, by Mr. Estwine, that shows the proposed expansion further. As you can see, it's getting the Dayton Valley area beyond the current area. And then also for your information, the last page, we have included the current Campo Metropolitan Plan area boundaries that have not changed since Campo was created. There have been no alterations since then. We have many times in the past year discussed the boundaries and what will happen in the future. And no one knows for sure what the census holds when it's conducted next year, except for we won't know next year what the results are. It'll probably take until 2011 into 2012, depending on which data, to find out the real results. But I think it's a fair assumption that the urbanized area, per the census, the minimal area of Campo will expand based on the development that occurred subsequent to 2000. Even if we don't have any development this year, not much last year, a lot of development happened over maybe a six-year period there intervening. So the boundaries will expand with the census, and what we have before us is a request to expand those boundaries prior to that. Now, there are several potential ramifications of this, and a few of them that I want to share with you I included here. While the federal government encourages us to include not only the current urbanized area, but anything that may urbanize over the next 20 years, they don't give you money for anything that may urbanize over the next 20 years. They give you money based on your current urbanized area population. So the PL funds, the planning funds that we receive to do all this wonderful planning that we do that pays 95% of the costs, they're based on the urbanized area population. A further expansion of the planning area boundaries would increase our responsibilities. We would have to plan for that area. If there was a TIP amendment in Lyon County out in Dayton, it would need to go into here, but we wouldn't be provided with any additional PL funds. The same thing for those transit funds. That $1,092,000 in change that we just got was based on our urbanized area population. An expansion of the metropolitan planning area boundaries would not give us any additional FTA funds. However, the cost, you know, while the cost would change, each year we develop, let's see if I can find here, we develop a unified planning work program. And as part of that work program, we divide the costs among the member agencies. And right now, Lyon County is only 3% of the Campo population in the metropolitan planning area. If their population was increased, per the numbers here, if we were using 2008 numbers for the Dayton Valley Mount House area, we'd have to use 2008 numbers for the portion of Douglas County and for Carson City, and there would be a redistribution of the annual local cost for Campo. Now, having said that, the local costs of Campo are quite low. The total cost is only about $30,000 because of carryover from the previous year. This year is only about $20,000. Lyon County's share is only about, I think it was only about $600 this year, if I'm right, Mr. Eswine. So even with this, if Lyon County is the one that's asking for this, their share is the one that would go up. Douglas and Carson's would go down, but the amount of money we're talking about is only a couple thousand dollars. So it's not a large sum of money. Like I said, we would have to our TIP would have to include projects in that area, as long with the regional transportation plan. We'd have to do things like update our regional travel demand model to make sure it included the entire metropolitan planning area. And what the other thing that would change was that for some funding sources, and the one that sticks out in my mind is, for example, enhancement funds. Right now, if they're for the enhancement cycle, the MPO gets to receive, usually the top funding for the top project off his list, and then we can fight for additional funds on a statewide basis. Right now, if Lyon County wished to pursue an enhancement project in the non-MPO portion of Lyon County, they could submit that project to the state as part of the statewide rural pool of funds, and they would compete with Elko and Winnemucca and Ely and everybody else in the state. And whereas if they were within that project would be competing against the Carson City and Douglas County proposed projects or any other entity, Railroad Museum, whatever it may be. So that would be a difference as well. Having said that, we've also discussed that frankly, Dayton is a logical extension that we do expect at some point to come into the Campo planning area. We do receive approximately $200,000 a year in federal Highway Administration PL funds, and while we are using approximately that amount, we've budgeted for that amount, we have never used all the planning funds that have been available to us. In fact, not only have we not used those funds, we actually have a reserve of about $300,000, which is equal to about a year and a half of our total operations. So if we did expand out towards Dayton there, and it cost us $40,000 in regional plan update and model expansion, that would only touch a fraction of the reserves that we have available to us through Mr. Taylor's office. The process that would need to be gone through if we wanted to do this would be that, pending your comments today, Campo staff would work with Lyon County further, and we'd have to look at those things of how the costs would be distributed in the exact geographic area and the population of that area, the comparable populations of Douglas and Carson. We'd have to bring it back to you as an action item, and if it was the desire of Campo, we would send official transmittal to the state. In particular, the governor would need to concur with any expansion. So we would need a resolution of this body signed by the chair to go to the governor, and pending the governor's approval, it would be forwarded to the Federal Highway Administration for their consideration and expansion. And pending approval, we would then need to go through that process. Having said that, I guess I would let Mr. Eswine discuss his county's desires for the expansion.
Okay. Mr. Eswine, the floor is yours.
Well, actually, I would like to ask if the county manager would like to address this this item.
And as Dennis is coming forward, I should point out that obviously this is an important item to Lyon County, and I laud Dennis the Stark, the county manager, for being here tonight. We did talk about this item beforehand, and I want to just give my comments, and I think it's not a secret to members here in the members of Campo and others that I definitely have been in support of expanding Campo boundaries, and I think what Lyon County has put forth here before us, I think, is very laudable, and I personally support this direction. So, Dennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. I think Patrick eloquently described the proposal. The Mount House area and Dayton area has grown significantly over the past number of years. And we're just on the forefront of this. We're trying to be proactive on the issue, knowing that in the future, after the census, you know, this will probably occur anyhow. And we value the partnership that we've had with Campo in the past year, and certainly we want to participate a little bit more fully in the future. And with that being said, we're even willing to pay $700 worth of dues. So we're looking for that increase, substantial though it might be, but we see the benefit regionally as far as what could occur and what has occurred. There's so much traffic through the Dayton Valley area, Mount House area, so many changes that have happened over the past 10 years and that we anticipate to occur. Economic development, as everybody knows, is slowed down, but we're anticipating that shortly, hopefully, it will pick up again. We'll have more retail, we'll have more housing, we'll have more development, and to be in front of it rather than behind it certainly makes sense as a partner with Campo.
Manager Stark, I just wanted to add on to what you said. Too often in my former professional life, we would get into situations too late in the game. And I think here is a situation where that area, as you pointed out, every time I drive out 50 and to see the whole Mount House Dayton area just exploding with changes and so on. And I would sure definitely concur with your comments, and I think it's very timely. So with that, Member Aldean.
Thank you. I don't have a question for Dennis. I have a question for Patrick, or whoever would care to answer this question. When these boundaries are changed pursuant to new census numbers, it's a pretty perfunctory thing for the governor to sign off on the expansion of the MPO boundaries, I presume. Is there a greater, in other words, if we're expanding the MPO area beyond the area that is considered urbanized, what sort of justification do we have to provide? Or is it also a very perfunctory thing, or does the governor care?
Well, the good news, Member Aldean, is that we're certainly not the first one to do this. I mean, a very quick search on the internet you can figure out where the last time was that Houston did this, or whomever else. There's a very easy template to follow, and a lot of what they're looking for is contained. You know, certainly this isn't the end of the work in any means, but a lot of what they're looking for is, you know, what are the population, you know, numbers in total and the densities, what are they now compared to what they were previously, and you know, what is the reasonableness, and can you prove indeed that there has been significant development since 2000? And as I said previously, it wouldn't be that hard to show that a lot did happen subsequent to 2000, so there is a recipe to follow.
Okay, Member Taylor.
And I'll just give you a brief synopsis of what that recipe might be. So under 23, Title 23, Section 1134C of the United States Code, then you have 23, Section 45308, Code of Federal Regulations. If you want to jot that down, you can look at it. So basically, the boundaries of the area, as Patrick said, are determined by agreement between the MPO and the governor. But the Metropolitan Planning Area You know, it includes, it can include all or part of a given county, including areas that due to growth characteristics may be anticipated to become urbanized within the next 20 years. And then the NDOT Program Development Division, which is my division, we recommend approval of that boundary based upon a consultation process with the MPO and the Federal Highway Administration, which includes the documentation of the projected 20-year growth area. Now, that being said, you have a census urbanized area boundary, which is determined by census, and then you have the adjusted urbanized census area boundary, which is used by us and Federal Highway to define that area upon which we designate highways under the functional classification system. And as Patrick knows, right now our roadway systems is in fact updating our functional classification roadmap, or map, if you will. So that may very well prompt an adjustment right there. But now you've asked what kind of information. It's a little bit more detailed. It's not so, you know, cut and dried. Some of the information you need is socioeconomic forecast and land use patterns based to determine the 20-year growth area. You need documentation used to support the inclusion of geographic areas, of the geographic area for the metropolitan planning area. Documentation, a consultation process with our local units of government, including letters of support for communities, et cetera, and discussion of any air quality, which it doesn't happen to be pertaining to Carson because we're not a non-attainment area, but also a map illustrating the proposed metropolitan planning area boundary. So it's not a cut and dried and simple process. It's certainly something we can start working on, working with our roadway systems and in Lyon County and Campo, you know, start working towards on our roadway systems so that, you know, once the census does come around that we, in fact, have, you know, a good area boundary. We have the urbanized and then the MPO area boundary. And I suspect, as I was talking to Jeff and earlier, that in the next census, we full well anticipate the boundary to extend a little further into Douglas County, quite frankly, because of the anticipated 20-year urbanized growth pattern. So hope that kind of highlighted and answered some of your questions, Shelley.
The only other question I have is, I'm assuming that we would be, everything that needs to be done is outlined by Dennis in order to make application for this change. It will be done by Campo staff in consultation with Lyon County, so we can rely on the Lyon County folks to do a lot of the legwork mm-hmm. in preparation for making application.
Well, right, and the good news is the timing is very opportune because in the next month we'll be developing our Unified Planning Work Program, as we always do, one of our other federal required documents that we do every year to say what tasks we will be undertaking. And if it were the desire of Campo, what we can do is to put that in our program to work with Lyon County, because the good news is that Lyon County has recently undertaken some planning of their own, looking at future development in that 20-year horizon, and they have information drawn that's very recent as well. So it could be included in our work program to indeed work with Lyon County. As you say, the consultation with local governments isn't a hard thing because they're the ones coming to us. You know, it makes it pretty easy.
Vice Chair Eschwein, I think you may want to comment on, and I suspect that Lyon County has a lot of this material already available. So.
Well, our compilation of data was one of the reasons we decided to pursue this, that, you know, looking at the data as we develop our master plan, it's clear to us that the growth boundaries of the Dayton Valley area, with the population increase within that boundary, is significant enough to warrant consideration as part of the larger metropolitan area. I also might point out that included within the boundary that we're proposing are existing urbanized clusters according to the 2000 census. So this just incorporates those clusters and plus some clusters that have been created since then.
Okay. Again, for I'm sure all the members have read the letter. Signed by by Mr. Stark in front of us. And so I have a letter to respond to, so I'm listening to everybody. And so with Patrick and I, we will need to put together a letter to respond. I think everyone has heard my position on this matter. And if anyone has a contrary position or anything to add, please let me know. Mayor Kroll?
I think it's a great idea. I think, you know, this just adds to the degree of regional cooperation we have, and, you know, it just seems to make sense that, you know, when you look at the growth in Douglas and in Mound House and Dayton, we need to, that's the area we deal with anyway around here. So, I mean, you know what, let's make it happen.
Okay, good. Manager Stark, do you have anything to add? I think you've gotten a pretty positive thing. We'll get to a letter to you, and we'll move forward on this, and we'll make it an action item here as soon as we can.
Yeah, next meeting we'll bring it back with an action item.
I'd like to thank the board and also give Paul a plug for his representation of Lyon County here on the board. And we look forward, as the mayor said, to continued regional participation with everybody. That's the way to go nowadays. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Stark. Does anybody from the audience have any comments on this? I think a very important matter of cooperation. It is just a matter of information. I see none. So with that, Patrick, I think you and I have got some marching orders, and we will do that. So that takes care of item F4. Let's see. Next on our agenda is item G, internal communication administrative matters, and I guess future agenda items. We just talked about one. We've got several.
Yeah, I think all of them have been mentioned. The ones that come to mind is the UPWP, as I ended up mentioning anyway. While the 30-day comment period will still be underway at the next during the next meeting, it will not have expired yet. We will still, you know, on the TIP, we'll still put that on the agenda anyway. That would provide another opportunity for public comment if anyone were interested. We'll talk about the MPO boundary expansion proposal, and then I'll be editing the notification for fare and service changes and bringing that back as well.
Okay, is any member have an additional agenda item? Okay, it looks like we've got plenty to do next month. Point out to the public, our next meeting is tentatively scheduled for 5:30 p.m. Wednesday, April 8, 2009, right here at the Sierra Room in the Community Center in Carson City. With that, can I have a motion for adjournment?
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn, and I'd like to notify people that the meeting of the RTC will commence in 5 minutes.
Okay, do I have a second? Well, I don't need a second for that. Okay, the meeting is adjourned.
Very good. How you doing, Joel?
Good.
Tip project.
Okay. Good. Absolutely. We got one more meeting. This is my part is done. Now I get to. Well, I know, so am I.
But I didn't want to feel fat. See how good I did when I didn't eat?
I know, you did great. You're going to do better, even. Probably won't take more dials. Now we got to move ourselves around.
Kathleen?
Commissioner
Aldean's.
Yeah, I go. Yeah, she goes where I'm at.
And you can just scoot that way. Put the mayor. The mayor should go over here.
Just sit right here. Importante. Other than Shelley.
side. Shelly, that'd be great.
Thank you.
so you cut all you want.
It's offensive, but had wooden slats that fall off and take off the chain link fence.
Good evening. I'd like to call the meeting of the Carson City Regional Transportation Commission to order. The date is Wednesday, March 11th, 2009. We're here in the Sierra Room at the Community Center, and it is approximately 7 o'clock. Kathy, will you please call the roll to determine a quorum?
Chairperson Aldean?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Carpenter?
Present.
Commissioner Kroll?
Here.
Commissioner Destardins?
Here.
Commissioner Mallory?
Here.
The quorum is present.
Thank you. Moving on to the next item on the agenda, item B, approval of minutes. Has everyone on the commission had a chance to review the minutes from our meeting of February 11th, 2009? And are there any comments or suggested corrections? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Any comments on the question? Any comments by members of the audience? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Next item, modifications to the agenda. Patrick, any modifications?
Not from staff.
All right, thank you. Any requested modifications by members of the commission? Moving on to item D, public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the commission may approach the podium and speak on matters related to the commission, but not on items agendized for this meeting. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please see me after the meeting, and we will agendize your item for further discussion at a future meeting. Are there any public comments? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Move on to item E, disclosures. Does any member of the commission wish to disclose a contact with the public regarding any item on tonight's agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on to item F, consent agenda. Any member of the commission or any citizens may request that any of the items on the consent agenda be removed and heard separately at this meeting. Does anyone wish to have any of the items removed for discussion and separate action? All right. Given that, I will entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda. Member
Madam
Coverdale.
Chair, I move to accept. I move to approve items F1, F2, and F3, and items F4 as presented.
Second.
As a consent.
Thank you. As your second from Commissioner Kroll.
Second.
Any comments on the question? Any comments from members of the audience? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Moving to public meeting items, item G1, possible action to authorize the proposed capital expenditure of Carson City share of Federal Transit Administration American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funds.
That's right, the stimulus funds.
And this is the reference I made during the Campo meeting to the one of the few times where it's unfortunate the order that we have these meetings. As was discussed during the Campo meeting, there's $1,092,274. Now that the funds have been divided per Campo policy, the Carson City RTC share is $950,278. And the question is how to expend those 100% federal capital eligible only monies. And what I'm going to review for you is the proposal from SAF as to how to expend those funds. And I'm going to go down the list and explain how those are proposed to be expended. Let's see. Number one, 0.75% of the allocated funds can be used to reimburse staff time for the administration of those funds. So the total is only $8,000, but as these funds do take the additional reporting requirements, we are taking advantage of somebody paying 100% of the cost of our time to administer those funds. So that's no-brainer number one, in our opinion. The other two are the next two that are ones that we want to make sure that we pursue. It says paratransit. Under the federal rules, we can use when we get our annual allotment of approximately $800,000, we can use the first 10% of those funds, $80,000, of our annual allotment as to use for operating the ADA, the FTA required ADA paratransit service, which in Carson City is called Jack Assist. We expend approximately $200,000 on that, and they let us count that first 10% as capital. So in all reality, we are operating buses with that. We are operating buses to pick up disabled persons. But they let us count a small portion of it as capital, which has always been advantageous to us because we can use it as 80% instead of 50%. Well, the FTA has decided to continue that, allowing that 10% to be used as capital. So the bottom line is that we can get $109,000 of operating of that Jack Assist service counted as capital. So we get 100% of the cost paid. The half of the cost of Jack Assist will be paid 100% by the federal government, which saves us operating funds, which are in short supply after having been reduced the city share from the Board of Supervisors, the transfer last year. So that saves us operating dollars. The same can be said for preventive maintenance. We can count preventive maintenance as a capital expense, reimbursable at 80%. But now we can count this with the stimulus monies as capital maintenance at 100%. Once again, that saves us the 20% that we would have spent otherwise of our precious local dollars. So those are the ones that save us monies that we would have had to expend in a normal basis. So that saves our fund balance for the transit system. Once we get beyond that, it is much more left up to choice. And what we've laid out here is this routing software for $60,000. How a transit system operates is that when you usually have the Jack Assist type of service, just like Reno as a service, except they have 50 vehicles, you have a service that goes around and picks up disabled persons, and you get driver manifests, and they need to go different points of the city all day long. Unfortunately, the software that we're using is more than 10 years old and only runs on Windows 98 equipped computers, and is not the most efficient in the world, and could certainly stand to be upgraded and would provide us operational efficiencies to reduce the cost that we pay to our contractor, for example, and the fuel, taking the most direct route and reducing the amount of time we have to spend out on the road. So we're looking at that as an approximately $60,000 investment in the ongoing efficiency of our service. We also have one vehicle in there that's listed as $180,000. We're thinking that's actually a little higher than normal, but if you're going to put it into the TIP, it's okay to be a little bit high. It's not okay to be a little bit low. if we come in $20,000 under, we'll then reallocate that $20,000. If we come in $20,000 over, we have to amend the TIP before we can spend it. I have attached to this packet an example of some of the literature of the bus we're looking at, and want to point out some of the differences. This might at first glance look similar to the buses that we have, and indeed there are some similarities, but the one that we are proposing to get, instead of being 24 or 25 feet long, it's about 4 feet longer. It has greater capacity, but the other, and that's important, the capacity, but more importantly, it has, number one, it has only one door instead of an ambulatory door at the front and a wheelchair lift at the back. There is only one door that is equipped with a ramp, so there is no mechanical lift to fail and be maintained as our current ones are. Number one. Number two, when you lay out our bus stops, it's difficult right now because our bus stops have to be located so that our buses can either pull up with the front door aligned or the rear door aligned, and that makes it much more difficult to lay our bus stops because you have to plan for the bus to be on both sides of that bus stop and not block any driveways or crosswalks. And the way this is handled is by having what's called a low-floor bus. You don't have the three steps to get up into it. It is easier for able-bodied persons or senior citizens or disabled persons to use. It also has the advantage of having the wheelchair locations towards the front of the bus. You can see on that last sheet that you can fold the seat down if there's no wheelchair. You can have two extra seats each. But if you do have wheelchairs, they are located up at the front towards the driver, where the driver is in closer proximity to the handicapped persons, because that's more desirable. And finally, instead of having a 5-year life expectancy, our current vehicles have a 5-year, 150,000 mile life expectancy. Vehicles like this tend to generally have an 8 to 10 year life expectancy, so you get a longer life out of them. And just going back to the capacity issues, we are now at the point on our fleet. We have 10 of the buses that you see on the street. 7 of them are slightly larger than the 3 oldest and smaller vehicles. At this point, we cannot put the 3 smaller vehicles on routes 1, 3, or 2A because we now run into capacity issues. I rode route 2A about a week and a half ago, and then the bus was full at 7 in the morning, taking half full of high school students going to high school. But we're actually running into capacity issues where we're at standing room only at certain times of the day, and those 3 smaller buses are only used on Route 2B, which is in 4th place on ridership and on our paratransit services. So we need to start exploring at least a slightly larger vehicle, and also the other improvements I mentioned, the low floor, the having no lift and having only one door. So this is meant to be a first expedition into a slightly different vehicle.
Patrick, I would assume, though, because of the improved accessibility for the handicapped, that this bus would be put on the route where we have the most handicapped drivers. I mean, I understand the increased capacity, seating capacity is important, certain other routes around town, but I would think that the first priority would be given to those routes where we have a well-defined handicapped population.
Well, right, but we do have wheelchair operations on every single route.
No, I know we do.
And indeed, there are routes where you could say this route has more. And indeed, it saves us operationally. It saves us time because right now, for example, Route 3 is the tightest of the routes because you do get wheelchairs, and we do have that has the most ridership, and it's good to stop and pick up people, but darn it all, it slows you down. And it makes it harder to get back to the transfer point on time. When we do have a wheelchair, it does slow us down because you do have to do that mechanical lift operation. And being able to just fold out a ramp and roll on is much more efficient and keeps our buses moving.
So what route will this bus be assigned to?
Primarily, Route 3 is where you'd put it. Okay. If at all, if you know, whenever you have an opportunity to put it on Route 3. Our hope is that we would get this and have a good experience and be able to acquire more of these vehicles. Ultimately, we'd like to have the size of vehicles we have now is perfectly fine for our Jack Assist service. Ultimately, the goal of the fleet would be to acquire somewhat larger vehicles to have a differentiated fleet where you'd have these somewhat larger vehicles on route where you have the capacity issues, and you maintain the smaller vehicles still because they are cheaper to operate, use a little bit less gas. You'd keep those on the paratransit routes because there's no capacity issues when you're transporting only the disabled folks.
Okay. And I'm assuming that all these vehicles are rear-wheel drive, is that right?
Yes, they're all rear-wheel drive, and they don't need air brakes yet.
But they do need chains.
Yes, chains. Well, and the air brakes are significant because once, if we'd ever move into air brakes, all of our drivers would have to go back to the DMV and get another endorsement.
Okay.
So we pay attention to such matters.
Commissioner Desjardins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to follow through on the routing software. Patrick, sometimes these are rather complex. Is training, the cost of training wrapped into the acquisition of that software?
Yes. Yes, in fact, we had, there are two primary vendors in the country. In the last 2 weeks, we've paid a visit to Reno's facility that uses the number one vendor and discussed with them the experience with that. I've had experience with them in the past. And then just this last Friday, we had the region sales rep for the number two vendor come and actually visit us and go through the software, run through the software for a couple hours, not only with Keith, Dan, and myself, but also with our operations manager and the general manager for the contractor as well. So we haven't committed anything, of course, but we're already going down the path of what would be required and what are the options.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you. Two questions, Patrick. The low floor bus sounds like a pretty good idea. Does it have space for advertising?
Yes. Yes. It, not only does it have space for advertising, it has more space for advertising. And for the questions that's been, you know, I told you previously when this last was asked, we had two vehicles that were ordered previous separate money completely that were ordered that arrived in November, and they did correctly have advertising plates on the side.
Excellent.
Unfortunately, they were otherwise the wrong vehicles.
Okay.
Were returned, but the good news is that the new vehicles rolled off the assembly floor earlier this week and will be delivered next week Wednesday.
Excellent.
Yes. Keeping my fingers crossed, the correct buses with advertising plates.
Good. Okay. My other question is regarding the routing software. I'm presuming that this is GPS compatible and that will be.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in fact, there are options. The one that came out on Friday, for example, that you have options of installing a hard, it's called a mobile data terminal, that will actually list for the driver, the manifest would actually be on there to tell them, you know, where their next stop is and GPS. Another cheaper option is to have, it's actually, frankly, a cell phone that has a mount that has almost all the capabilities and has GPS. So there are options for that, and then we'll have to figure what to do with the current GPS, of course. And this is where the differentiated fleet is where we want to aim as well, because those mobile data terminals that show you, here's your route manifest and here's where to go, you know, pick up, you know, Phyllis, Abel, whatever, at this location, the times, that is needed and especially useful, and the efficiency comes in the paratransit operations. You don't need a manifest to tell somebody to drive, you know, down to, you know, to the hospital and back 12 times.
Right.
So there's a difference there as well. If we can obviously minimize the cost, we don't install anything we don't need.
But the GPS component will also tie into the dispatch software.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Right now we have GPS software that's not tied into the GPS, or excuse me, that's not tied into the dispatch software.
Okay.
But indeed, it allows you to, you know, do the scheduling on the fly. If you have three vehicles out there, and someone gets the dispatcher takes a call for a trip 2 hours from now, we're not required to to provide that trip, but the dispatcher will be able to put that into the system, and the system will try to figure out if any of the vehicles can be routed there and pick that person up on the fly, because we still try to meet all our requirements, even if, you know, if we can't. I do have one more item that I have to make sure I cover.
No, certainly. Okay. Well, I see no more lights on my board, so go ahead.
Oh, just one more item, and this is an important one, is that the it's listed here as transit center design, $60,000, and that is definitely an estimate. But what that is envisioning, and this is for certainly for the mayor's benefit and for the entire RTC, is that right now we have a transfer point where our buses line up, and we do have a couple of shelters, and it is functioning at the moment, and the buses are able to operate in and out of it. But with these funds, we want to at least take a look at the opportunity that these funds afford us to have an improved transfer point downtown. Now, and that's why you can see here on this table that I provided that we have listed here an estimated $500,000 in the items that I've just listed, and it leaves approximately $450,000 uncommitted. The intent is that we do have 365 days for the balance of the funds. The intent is to initiate a design of, first of all, get a location first of a transfer point. It could be the existing one, could be a different one somewhere in downtown, and to do the design. And if it provides fruitful, we could potentially use that remaining $450,000 or a portion of it to construct an improved transfer point. But having said that, the location has not been selected, nor the design. That's why we'd have to do the study first, and staff is not committing at this time that yes, indeed, we will definitely use $450,278 to construct a transfer point. But as we mature the system, and as we now have the BlueGo Route 21X that runs over Spooner, is jointly funded by the Carson RTC with federal funds, now meets us at the time transfer downtown eight times a day, and we're moving towards the Washoe RTC bus with their recent change to also meet at our transfer point, which is very very helpful for our riders to be able to transfer between these. We start to actually getting a real nexus of multiple vehicles coming together, and a real need to provide some improved amenities and space for this facility. Now, having said that, we will leave open the possibility that if for some reason that doesn't come to fruition, we can always take that and that bus that we discussed worked out. We could always, 4 months from now, go and say, let's go buy three more of those buses, or three different buses if we didn't like that first one. But we'd like to at least consider the possibility of an improved transfer point downtown. And now I'm done.
The funds for the balance have to be obligated within 365 days of the 180 days. Is that an addition to, or is it?
No,
we can only hope.
The rule is that the idea is that you have the 50% of the money obligated within the first 180 days.
Right.
You could obligate it all in the first,
sure,
180 days, but the next 50% must be obligated by the end of a total of
365 days.
So we have until early March of next year to have it all obligated.
Well, I guess my question is, what do you visualize in terms of floor area? And obviously, building a transfer station is just one part of the equation. You have to acquire the land or find a piece of land that somebody is willing to give you, or that the city already owns.
You are entirely correct. And there are many, many options. We are not envisioning a Taj Mahal by any means. You don't build a Taj Mahal with $450,000. But there are other options available, including there's still the curbside option with improved shelters and awnings that let people walk from the shelter to the bus without exposing themselves to the element. If there were a piece of land, whether it be an existing parking lot, you could do only curbside. You could do, even if you got a thin strip next to the curb, you could have one row of buses on the existing curb line and one row on what used to be a piece of a parking lot. You could go through the middle of a parking lot. You could potentially take a single block of a city street that is now currently open to traffic but not important for traffic flow and convert it to a transit-only facility, going from one lane in each direction and one parking lane to having a large median and only buses. There are many, many options available that, that I've worked with, and that's why you really need to take a look at it. But then there are also operational considerations where if you're getting out onto Stewart Street and Carson Street, you need to do so at a traffic signal, and you need to make sure you don't have a one-way street going the wrong way off of Carson Street. So there are a lot of, and we also, of course, have the Nugget property that's in, that's kind of in the middle there that, that blocks some north-south flow. So there are a lot of, there are a lot of what-ifs and questions.
All right, but we'll be exploring those options, I'm sure. Commissioner Mallory.
Thank you. I got a question for Patrick. Who's going to do the design of the transfer center? And how long will it take?
Well, we will. We would certainly be hiring somebody to do that. That wouldn't. We're not going to do that in house. And I believe that, that because we're not envisioning a significant interior structure, you know, if you know what I mean. Like I said, this is not going to be a large building with five offices in it. I believe the design will take less than 4 months, and we'll have the ability to like I said, be flexible as if we do decide to proceed with building it, or we'll have the opportunity, like I said, to expend the funds elsewhere within that 365-day period.
Doesn't some of the design get tied back to the location?
Yes, absolutely. It's we're not going to do, we don't have time to do two separate. We're not going to do pay one firm to do the location and one to do the design. We'll do it as one effort, so that because if we string this all out, it could take a significant amount of time.
But given the fact that design is tied to location, I would hope that Patrick, once you do a site review, that you would bring, if in fact the RTC decides tonight that these approves this list of priorities for the spending of this money, that you would bring, information about the site selection, the selection of the actual site, back to the RTC for formal approval.
Yeah, this would be something that would affect, obviously, many. Yeah, obviously the RTC, but there are other, we'd want to get input from all sorts of different sources as well. Just even discussing it informally with someone like Joe McCarthy today, just the possible implications of something like this are broad, and if it would impact any traffic flow downtown, we'd have to obviously evaluate that and seek public comment on that as well. So not only would we come back obviously to RTC, we would be seeking public comment otherwise as well.
But I think given 365 days sounds like a long time, but years pass very quickly. And so, I think you need to put together a fairly concise timeline that addresses the giving yourself a certain amount of time to find a potential location, to have those conversations with impacted parties, to bring it back to the RCC for consideration and approval, for locating an architect who can actually do the design work. I really think we need to give some serious thought to how we're going to do this in a very methodical way, so we don't find ourselves spending money unnecessarily or running out of time.
Right, and you are entirely correct, and I'm very much aware of that, and that's why I use words like intended to use for, because right. Should this come off the rails for any reason, we need to be prepared to expend the money for other uses, whether it be buses or whatever else. We need to always have a plan B, just because of the nature of the funding and the timelines that we have.
Okay.
I agree completely.
Okay, great. Thank you, Patrick. Yes.
Patrick, I'm not adverse at all to transfer centers because I think they're really a good thing. But the site that it's going to be on has a tremendous amount of determination on the design and how the traffic's going to flow and everything else. And I agree with Shelley that's got to be something that's got to be fleshed out real early.
And there are numerous pitfalls, because if you just try to take one block, it wouldn't be that hard to identify one block of a current city street to use for this. But we have to remember that you can't just take a random block and use it, number one, because of circulation, but number two, if you were to have the median approach, the buses need to pull in on the left side of the road. So you have buses on the wrong side of the road, and there are a lot of impacts there.
And I hope that if this gets into trouble, early on it's seen and that money's not lost, it can be reallocated quickly.
Yes.
If I may, worst case scenario, we would spend the money on planning and preliminary design, and we're going to know within a few months whether or not this thing can happen in 365 days. Even if it can't be built, we will still have a planning in place as to where this should be, who it would serve, and what it's going to look like for future funding down the road when we could afford it, and then move these funds elsewhere and spend them to make sure they get spent. So we will have a plan and a preliminary design. That's the least that would come out of this, and we would hope for more, but depending on the process, and it sounds like you are very familiar with how long that may take. So.
And one thing to remember is that if we did, you know, as long as we don't have to have it built within 365 days. Once again, it's the obligation. If we had a contract awarded to a contractor to build whatever it may be, 11 months from now, that's fine. You know, it could take, you know, 3 months to construct whatever it may be. But as long as we have that funds obligated, the contract awarded, we're not at risk of losing anything.
Okay, thank you, Patrick. Any other comments or questions by members of the commission? Any comments or questions by members of the audience? All right, would someone care to make a motion?
Madam Chair, I move to approve the action to authorize the proposed capital expenditures of Carson City's share of the Federal Transit Administration's American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funds. Fiscal impact, $950,278 of transit capital, 100% funded from the Federal Transit Administration American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funds.
Second.
Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Thank you. Moving on to item G2, information regarding the status of anticipated funding for the roadway projects through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Patrick.
Well, there's not too much point in rehashing what we've already discussed this evening. CAMPO did not get a direct allocation. There was a list submitted by Carson City staff to the Nevada Department of Transportation. It's also in the possession of other agencies like NACO, like the Federal Highway Administration. Has also personally delivered that to them. The list has been submitted, and something that hasn't been mentioned this evening is that tomorrow at 2 p.m. the State Transportation Board is going to be meeting with an agenda that is focused entirely upon the stimulus funds, and Deputy Director Schultz and I will be attending that meeting, representing the city to hopefully learn more and to campaign for funding for Carson City RTC proposed projects, the ones that were including that TIP that was reviewed by proposed TIP amendment reviewed by CAMPO. Having said that, there's still a lot that we don't know about what NDOT will finally decide to do for the sub-allocation of those funds.
Well, and coincidentally, we have two gentlemen in the audience who might be able to enlighten us on that question, and they're both looking around them, wondering who I'm referring to. So obviously, there are a lot of unanswered questions. I don't know if you gentlemen have answers for us, but we have Kent Cooper in the audience and Dennis Taylor, and would either of you gentlemen care to comment on what might happen at the meeting tomorrow at 2 p.m.?
Thank you, Chairman Aldean. Board, Kent Cooper with Nevada Department of Transportation. Board meeting scheduled at 2 o'clock tomorrow. We have a draft list that we took before the legislative bodies yesterday, both the joint budget committees in the morning at 8 o'clock and the joint transportation committees at 4 o'clock. That outlines what we are requesting in regards to a stimulus package of funding. There is a placeholder in that list for I think what we're calling probably incorrectly rural counties, but basically the Nevada Association of Counties and the Nevada League of Cities, as we discussed, Commissioner Aldean on the phone. What we are doing with that list, and I think Mr. Taylor addressed it a little bit earlier tonight, is reviewing what the submittals were from all the other areas of the state that didn't get specific set-asides, and we're trying to make a first cut at that list to determine eligibility. A lot of the projects we're seeing from a lot of the counties, quite frankly, are not eligible There were some criteria for the stimulus funds. First criteria is that any project must be on the functional class system of roadways. We have received the list that Patrick provided, I believe, very early on. I can't even remember when you submitted that, Patrick, but I think it was at the
The 17th.
At the legislative body, real early on. So those are, I believe, eligible projects. I think our desire was, is once we make that first cut, are they eligible projects? Can they meet environmental and right-of-way clearances? We were going to submit those back to NACO and the League of Cities and have them try to take a cut at prioritizing those. And then those will be submitted back to the director of the department for further review. I have noted and discussed with the director your concern, Chairwoman, that maybe not all entities are members of NACO or the League of Cities, and she is very well aware of that, and so she won't use their criteria necessarily as her final basis in deciding how to allocate those funding. In addition to that, on our original list, we had a project on State Route 305 near the Battle Mountain area. That took up some of that money that we had allocated for the $7 million set aside. And I think we're willing to remove that and entertain other projects. So with that, I think what we're asking our board to approve tomorrow will not define those projects for the set aside money for the rest of the state. We're hoping to do that in the next 2 to 4 weeks. The requirement the department had was for 50% of the state allocation must be obligated within 120 days. We're about 25 days into that 120 days right now. So what the department lined out was basically overlay projects on the state system that had already been identified to at least meet that 50% requirement. Maybe some other things to add to that. We do there is $1.5 billion available to the USDOT in discretionary money. They are required to come up with criteria within 90 days of passage of the act. So what's that, approximately by May 17th, and then the states have 90 days after that time frame to submit their applications for projects. Included in that list is Carson the Freeway Phase 2B. The other three projects were I-15 South Design Build, US 95, what we're calling Package 1 in the Las Vegas area. It's from Rainbow Curve up to Ann Road, and then US 395 in Reno from Moana Lane up to the Spaghetti Bowl. So those are four projects, including the Carson City one, that are ready to go, that could go out immediately. Initial criteria for that funding is it has to be a project between $20 million and $300 million. It's supposed to have national prominence, handle freight, deal with congestion mitigation, and deal with safety concerns. So obviously Carson Bypass Phase 2B does all of those. Hard to say how that will all shake out and where that will come, but I think it will help the department. Any additional money that comes to the state from the federal government will help. In addition to that, on the initial 120 days that states have to obligate half of their funding, the USDOT will reallocate the funding that some states don't spend back to the whole program to the state departments of transportation. In the past, we've been very successful at getting this money. In fact, about 3 years ago, we got $40 million additional to the state of Nevada. And when you consider we only get about $220, $240 million a year, that was pretty substantial. What we are hearing in our discussions nationwide is there might be up to $8 billion available nationwide that some states will not spend. Discussions right now, and we can't tell if it's just politics, but some states are talking about not accepting any of the stimulus money. If you've been paying attention to the legislative process at all, huge issues facing the legislature in regards to the stimulus money and the governor. The education and the health and welfare money come with a lot of strings, a lot of concern with accepting that money. You're committing the state or the local areas to programs that they just can't support come 18 or 24 months from now. A lot of confusion, I think, and a lot of lack of guidance from the federal government right now in regards to even the transportation money. Quite frankly, the transportation money is the easiest of the stimulus money to spend. They based it on the previous federal program. We're used to having to spend the federal money every year. You lose it or it gets reobligated. So we want to be in a position to spend as much as we can, as quick as we can, so we can be in a position to appropriate more of that money or get more of that money from the federal government. So that's kind of where we're at right now. We do have in that list tomorrow the V&T Phase 3A project for about $3 million, I think, which is great news. Quite frankly, I thought the department would take a little bit more pressure in regards to allocating half of the enhancement money that was part of the stimulus package to one project, and certainly to one project in Northern Nevada. I'm sure you folks have been aware of some of the newspaper articles in regards to Southern Nevada's desire for their fair share. Indeed, Director Morse, or Interim Executive Director Morse with Washoe RTC, was advocating that more money go to Meadowood Interchange in Reno, and that we cancel the maintenance projects we have on the list for Washoe County and allocate that all to Meadowood Interchange. I believe he will probably take that same tact tomorrow morning at our board meeting. We've been pretty firm. The impetus behind the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act money was to stimulate the economy, to create jobs, and so on. And I think what we have tried to do is put out as many different contracts as we can, as opposed to spending it all on one job. Indeed, we have interstate maintenance projects that are $20 to $30 million. We could have done, you know, five projects and pretty much allocated all the money, but that I don't think we felt was the intent of that money. I think Carson City does stand a pretty strong chance of getting some of the NACO and League of Cities money. I can't, and that's probably an incorrect way to phrase, again, that term for that money, but the additional money that Director Martinovich has set aside. We have received a request from Douglas County to do the third northbound lane, real close to your county line out here, that was going to go forward as part of development agreements here about 3 years ago, and then the development kind of fell off there, and that fell off the picture. So that is another project in the local area that that has warranted some attention, and they are requesting funding for. Lyon County has asked for a number of different projects, a little bit of confusion in regards to how Lyon County operates, because typically we get requests from Fernley, from Yarrington, from Dayton, and from Lyon County. And then, and indeed, I think for the East Fernley Interchange and some of the proponents for that project, they've asked for some money. So the main one that they asked for really was the widening of US 50, continued extensions out to the east. Those projects, quite frankly, aren't ready. We're working on the design of the next one from Chaves Lane, and I can't remember where the termini is. It doesn't go all the way to Silver Springs. But really, you need to have projects that can go out very quickly. They need to have environmental clearance. They have to have right-of-way certification done. Again, they need to be on the functional class, and they need to be in a transportation plan. Certainly the projects you submitted to us can be amended into your plan if they aren't already there very quickly by this body or by the CAMPO board, so we don't have a concern with that.
It's been done.
Yeah, primarily they're maintenance type of activities. We're not building new roads.
Right.
We're not proposing to build new roads, which would have to be in the plan. If we go and reconstruct Lompa Lane, that's just under the heading in the plan of, yes, you will spend money to maintain your roads. So no concern from our side.
You bet. And I think Mr. Pittinger is also aware that typically on these maintenance activities, the federal government is making you make sure you have ADA compliance. I think you folks are in pretty good shape. You've been looking at that real seriously over the last 2 to 3 years. And I think that's
a major component of most of these projects,
street projects. Yeah, and that is a requirement also. So there is concern with getting the money out the door quickly. That was the intent of the act. Now, I also think, just from a personal perspective, that it will be one of the criteria that they use if they are reallocating any of the money that other states can't use in a timely fashion. I think the first criteria will probably be, from my perspective, did you get everything out you needed to in 120 days? And the second criteria, how much of the remaining money have you really obligated and tried to put people to work with? So with that, why don't you go ahead and fire away at me?
Well, Kent, thank you very much. That was a very thorough report. And I'm going to, you know, I don't want to belabor the point, but I am a little concerned. I don't know if any member of staff has been contacted by Jeff Fontaine or any member of NACO regarding our priority list of projects. You know, I'm Patrick's indicating that he hasn't heard from anyone, and Deputy Schultz or has obviously not received any contact from NACO, and I don't know how aggressive they're being, Kent, and that's one of my concerns about soliciting input from their member organizations. We, for example, are no longer a member of the League of Cities, so I doubt if we'll be contacted by David Frazier. So, and I understand the intent. The intent is to be as inclusive as possible to make sure that nobody is excluded from the process. but I'm just not, I, at the end of the day, I hope that, you know, Director Martinovich and you and other members of staff will be the ones to take a, you know, a objective look at these projects to make the final determination as to which projects actually comply with the criteria.
Absolutely, Chair. Absolutely, Chairwoman Aldean, and I appreciate your comments. When we discussed it on the phone earlier, I relayed those comments to the director that not everybody might be a member of those two organizations, and that we needed to be a little bit more open once we received feedback from them.
Okay, thank you, Ken. Any questions for Ken? Members of the commission, we're going to let them off easy. Don't expect this every time, Ken.
I got my bills paid in the back of the room, so I'm happy, actually.
Okay, sure, you got no questions.
Any questions for Mr. Cooper from members of the audience? Yes, sir, please come forward. No, you have to come forward and identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Dave Unks. I'm a Carson City resident. Yeah, I'm a little confused. Earlier in the on the comments, it says the public is not allowed to make comments on agenda items, but obviously you are.
You have to wait until the item is actually introduced.
Well, that's what that means.
Right.
Okay, well, the only question I would have, forgive my ignorance, but phase 2B is of the bypass. That would be from Fairview to
the base of Spooner.
The base of Spooner,
Highway
okay.
50 West.
And that, as I understand, is shovel-ready and is being considered as priority and from funds from the stimulus package?
Under the discretionary funding, as I understand it, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I just wanted to share, because I might make a comment. I have a map at home that I was just looking at the other day, and it says proposed bypass phase two, which is the complete from 50 to to the base of Spooner. It says proposed opening, you know, 2010. So,
well, great expectations.
We missed that mark a little bit, but I just wanted to be sure that I was understanding what was said correctly. Thank you.
Thank you. And Kent, did you have a comment?
Yes, thank you, Chairwoman. Again, Kent Cooper from Nevada DIT. I'll give you a brief update, and I haven't been studying this real closely because I've been a bit busy the last month or two dealing with these issues. Current status, as I know it is, phase 2A should open sometime later this summer in the July-August timeframe. Haven't heard exact dates there, but I think it's going real well. Phase 2B, which will go from Fairview to the US 50 junction, is pretty much complete with design. What remains to be done is a slight amount of right-of-way and then utility relocation and then the final project. So what we have done at the department right now, knowing that funding is limited right now and 2B is a little bit uncertain, is we have asked our workers and our consultant to repackage phase 2B to allow us to move forward with an approximately $15 million project, assuming we can't do the whole thing. What this would do basically is finish up the right-of-way, do utility relocation, handle some of the drainage issues that we have as you come from the US 50 interchange at the south end of town and then along towards the Edmonds alignment there. Some of those utilities indeed go in the Clearview and Kuntz structures that are scheduled to be built. And in our discussions, typically when you talk to the utility companies, they will take no action even if you allow them to move forward unless they see construction happening. So we had concern with just doing the right-of-way and utilities. The repackaging would include the Clearview and Kuntz structures in that $15 million, which I think would provide further impetus to complete the freeway with, you know, we don't typically leave bridges sitting out there, or it usually isn't a good public policy decision anyway. So we're repackaging that for a date sometime this fall. I do have concern with moving forward with anything right now during the legislative session. I want to you know, kind of lay kind of low and allow the legislature to do their work and you folks to do your work. But we do have plans to advance that. If we do end up going in that direction, obviously we would come before this board first. But the advantage to me is if we do that, then you are ready with a project that will not, as you know, now when we go forward, we say we're going to go to construction and then we take 2 years to do utility relocation. And we've dealt with that on this project before. So I think it's a good option to move in that direction. Then in addition to that, the comment made by your member of the public, if indeed you did get funded with that, with the $1.5 billion in discretionary funding that's part of the Recovery Act, We wouldn't need to go to that direction of doing the $15 million project. We would move forward, and that is indeed designed and ready to go now.
And we would, can I get you on the record to obligate NDOT to basically forgive the the additional $10 million that is theoretically owed once the freeway reaches Highway 50 West?
And I'm pretty good at having ignorance on that issue. Probably can't speak to it.
Please stick around for the next Please stick around for the next agenda.
That's right. We'll be revisiting that issue shortly.
Okay, I think you've been working with the director more on that and with the planning director, Tracy Larkin-Thomason, and probably have to ask them about those topics.
Okay. All right, Kent. Thank you. Yes, Bob.
Kent, can you... can you help me understand a little bit more about the process of the discretionary funding? What are the mechanics of that? I'm obviously asking because I want to know what levers to pull.
In regards to the Recovery Act, yeah. Mayor? Mayor, our understanding is, and again, I think the federal government right now is struggling with this first round of money and trying to give us guidance on the reporting requirements and all those type of activities. But what was stated in the bill was there would be $1.5 billion nationwide, $1.5 billion nationwide at the USDOT's discretion to award. USDOT was directed, Office of the Transportation Secretary was directed to come up with criteria for those applications 90 days from the enactment of the act, which was February 17th. Following that 90-day period, they're giving the states 90 days to then submit those applications. And so we're already gearing up to prepare the applications for the four projects I have identified that are on the list.
And 2B is on the list, right?
2B is on the list, yes. There could be another couple projects added to that. That's kind of at our board's discretion, but really there isn't a lot that is ready to go, and you really need to be ready to go. What we have heard informally from the USDOT is those issues of it needs to have national priority, so certainly extension of the freeway through Carson would have national priority. It needs to deal with some freight movements, which Carson City has been trying to deal with through the downtown corridor forever. It needs to have some safety issues that you're dealing with there, and I'm trying to think of the fourth element that they've talked about, but we have seen nothing in writing in that regard. Projects need to be between $20 million and $300 million in scope, so they're not going to fund, you know, a gigantic project that would eat up all the money. And I believe there's also some provisions in there in regards to distributing the money nationwide, i.e. you can't put everything in the northeast quarter of the United States.
So then this once it comes from you to USDOT, it gets reprioritized up there? Or if it's on your list, does it get funded?
No, it will be a discretionary grant program from the USDOT. So all the states will submit all their projects. USDOT will make the selection of which projects they fund. They could, in my opinion, Mayor, they could take none of our projects. They could take one of them. They could fund a portion of one, which raises some serious issues for the department. For instance, US 95 project in Vegas is about $155 million project. It's scheduled to go out in about 2012. What if they give us $20 million? And then the time frames with that money also apply. So it's making us strategize in regards to how we advance those type of projects, you know. But certainly those projects are small enough in scale and scope. We could bond, or there are some opportunities for us to move those forward. And it allows us to move other parts of the program forward, even if they do fund something, for instance, in Las Vegas. But we'll really need to wait for that 90-day time frame to see what criteria they're going to throw out there in regards to projects you would want to advance and what we need to provide for backup to provide that ammunition in the selection process.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kent. Any other questions for Kent? All right. Any other questions from members of the audience? Seeing none, this is an informational item only. So, thank you, everyone. We'll move on to item G3, report on the status of negotiations with NDOT regarding Phase 2B of the freeway.
Okay. I'm gonna walk you through a little bit about how we got to where we are and where we're looking to go to, and we'll see if we can get Mr. Cooper back up there to explain it all for us from NDOT's perspective. But The sheet, I'm gonna walk through this just briefly. The sheet that's attached to the table, it says City NDOT Freeway Funding Agreement Summary. This actually fills two very large binders in Andy's office, hundreds and hundreds of pages. But if you boil it down to one page, here we are. The original agreement was for phase one city funding of city was supposed to pay total $19 million with a voluntary 5-cent gas tax levied here in the city. And those payments did. A total of $14.2 million in payments were made per that agreement. The First Amendment in 2004 suspended the 5-cent gas tax for phase one for 3 years and requires the city to complete the project that we just completed, the Fairview Drive widening. The city is the one that footed the bill for that project for the entire length, and so we had a hiatus that we are now currently still in because we just spent about $5 million on the Fairview Drive project, and it also committed us to additional payments for phase two using instead of a 5-cent tax, a 3-cent tax, and this is where we start catching up with the current. We have $5 million to be paid initially, and if the freeway is not completed, then the second part, the $10 million, is suspended until the freeway is completed. Carson City also agreed to take over Carson Street for its entire length at some point in the future. If indeed there was a completion to Fairview, we would take over only the portion from the north boundary is actually Arrowhead down to Fairview Drive initially, and then eventually take over the portion from Fairview south to the base of Spooner following the completion of phase 2B. Also, this is key, the bottom of the second column there. NDOT is to rehabilitate at a minimum of a 2-inch overlay that portion of Carson Street prior to Carson City taking over maintenance responsibilities. Obviously, Carson Street is a significant roadway and does have significant maintenance responsibilities. Amendment 2, the most recent amendment, the last one that was completed, the major provisions, is, of course, applies to Phase 2, which is currently under construction, Phase 2A is. The significant thing is that the city took several state streets, not all of them, but some of them, King, Washington, Ormsby, Winnie, that took portions of streets, and in exchange for taking over those long-term maintenance responsibilities, the city was let out of the $4.8 million remaining on that initial $19 million. So the city has retained those funds and is currently on a hiatus, and the 3-cent payment was further deferred. The resumption was deferred until July 1st of this year to allow for the construction of Fairview Drive. So the city still paid that, but we had an additional deferral before the payments resume. So as it stands now, the city is still obligated to pay a total of $15 million through a 3-cent sales tax, beginning first with $5 million and starting July 1st of this year.
Gas tax.
Excuse me. Gas. Sorry. Gas. Yes, thank you. Sorry. Yes, not sales tax. Okay. Yes, thank you. That was a major difference. Yeah. Thank you very much. 3-cent gas tax, not sales tax, resuming July 1st of this year. If there is a significant delay in the construction of Phase 2B, which is possible, the 3-cent gas tax payments would be made until $5 million is reached, and then payments would again be suspended until the completion of the freeway, and then payments would resume until the total of $10 million is paid to the Nevada Department of Transportation. Additionally, under where it stands now, we would, as I mentioned previously, assume maintenance responsibilities for Carson Street from NDOT, from Arrowhead down to Fairview Drive. However, NDOT would need to rehabilitate Carson Street prior to then. What is being proposed and discussed with NDOT is that the city would agree to take maintenance responsibilities for additional streets that are currently owned by the state in lieu of that initial $5 million set of payments that is scheduled to start now only 4 months. 4 months from now, so it's fast approaching those payments again. Just as an example of some of the streets that we're talking about here that are still in state ownership that are up for discussion and negotiation is College Parkway from Carson Street to the north terminus of Airport Road. Airport Road itself from College Parkway down to US 50. The city owns it south of US 50. Stewart Street for its length from US 50 south to its southern terminus. Snyder on the south side of town. There's also Fifth Street heading through town. And I leave it out, Darren. Those are the primary roadways that were discussed. Oh, I know I left out. And a portion of what is US 50 right now. Right now, US 50 extends from by itself, and four runs concurrently with 395 from Carson Street east all the way into Lyon County. It is ultimately the goal of NDOT, as portrayed to us, that NDOT would continue to own and maintain US 50 from the Lyon County border all the way to the current terminus of the freeway, and that ultimately, once the freeway phase 2B is completed, that NDOT has a desire for the city to take over ownership and maintenance of William Street, which is US 50 now, from the freeway west to Carson Street as well. And obviously these are significant roadways with large amounts of vehicle miles traveled on them. And they do pose different issues for us. Maintaining US 50 is much different than even maintaining a Coons or a Solomon or these other roads. There are different, there are more signals, they have different maintenance costs that come along with it. We would still, under this proposal, we would still have a deferring a 3 cent payment until after the phase 2B of the freeway is over. And it would have a specific date of July 1st, 2010 for Carson City to take over ownership of Carson Street from Arrowhead to Fairview. That would have a specific date, July 2010. And very importantly, it would have, instead of NDOT making that required pavement rehabilitation prior to turning over the street to us, the NDOT would make a cash payment to the city in lieu of that previously agreed upon pavement rehabilitation. And the value of that said cash payment is still up for debate and discussion as well. Having said that, that is where we stand at the moment. Staff's primary concern now is, of course, getting through this process and continuing with NDOT, even as they are dealing with everything that Assistant Director Cooper just outlined. We have a need to continue to proceed on this process, because should it not be worked out per the agreement, our payments would resume on July 1st of 2009, this year. And that would certainly affect, I brought with me the current tip for the RTC. There's a separate tip for the RTC. And whether or not we have that stream of funding available to us would certainly affect the Carson City's RTC's funding source, whether or not we're making those payments to NDOT or not on July 1st of this year.
Well, I think there's something else that comes into play, though, because technically, even though the date for the completion of the freeway to Highway 50 West has not come and gone, NDOT is going to be in default under the terms of the agreement with Carson City. So I think that everything, frankly, needs to be suspended at this point, and no dates are certain, because, I mean, we have a situation where we have two parties to an agreement. You know, we've lived up to our end of the bargain. Admittedly, NDOT has given us some leeway, for example, with the suspending collection to allow us to make the improvements to Fairview, and Carson City was the one who suggested that we might want to break the second phase into two phases in case there wasn't sufficient money to complete the project. And I certainly want to proceed on, in good faith. obviously the maintenance, long-term maintenance costs of the roads that we would be assuming responsibility for is a significant issue for us, especially with declining revenues. And Patrick, have we put a dollar value on the maintenance of these roads?
Well, NDOT certainly has. They have provided us with their estimated maintenance payments, the estimated maintenance costs for these roadways for the next three-year period. But as in any negotiation, obviously we are going to, not only are the costs up for discussion, the fact is that we will obviously own and maintain these little roads for much longer than 3 years.
And Patrick, I think those figures need to be shared with the members of RTC. I was a party to these discussions early on, and then staff kind of took them over, and I appreciate that. I mean, you've been communicating with your counterparts at NDOT, but I think there needs to be a more fluid conversation between staff and the members of RTC so we know what direction we're going in terms of coming to some sort of ultimate resolution.
Right. And there are numerous moving parts in all of this, but another one that comes to mind is the fact that we were informed by NDOT formally of, you know, not that it wasn't becoming general knowledge that there was going to be a significant delay to Phase 2B construction. And unfortunately, we were informed of that as we were out to bid on the Fairview Drive widening project. And at that was the point at which NDOT informed Carson City that the adequacy of the previously approved by city, state, and the Federal Highway Administration improvements, the question was, what are the adequacy of those improvements now that there was going to be a delay and the potential for additional traffic growth over a longer period of time? So as we were building the original Fairview Drive widening project, we had to go through an exercise with NDOT staff of the forecast and modeling of what would happen to traffic instead of having a two-year delay. What if that is like that for a longer period of time? And what was found by even the NDOT traffic analysis folks was that there was significant risk of failure of the road of building the road only as originally planned. And the result of that was that Carson City incurred costs totaling approximately $1.6 million in addition and above and beyond what was originally anticipated. Carson City spent $1.6 million to make improvements due to the fact that NDOT notified us that that there was going to be additional delay. So Carson City spent $1.6 million expanding the project to replace the pavement on Fairview Drive from Roop to California Streets, and Carson City used its money additionally to improve the intersection of Fairview Drive and Carson Street to provide additional capacity on a state-owned road to improve the operations and to prevent Fairview Drive failing. So there's yet another expense that the city has incurred due to the state's delay on Phase 2B. That is also a consideration in this discussion.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Chairman Aldean. I completely concur with what Chairperson Aldean said, but gosh, when you were naming off those streets that our friends at NDOT wanted us to assume responsibility for, I'm looking at, you know, in 10 years out, we'll go broke. I mean, that's just like, those are major, major roads. And Highway 50 is that's a considerable undertaking for us to maintain, including equipment. And we have to, you know, purchase equipment and hire people. I mean, it's just the list goes on and on. That doesn't even start to address overlays and things like that. So I think that's probably a good deal, but maybe not for us. And as far as the timeline is concerned, that's absolutely correct. I mean, we once had a timeline, and everyone was going to stick to it, but things have changed, and we need to get back to the table.
And we need to have the people from the RTC board involved at the table.
The one question, you know, that I frequently get, Kent, maybe you can address this for me, that I get from constituents in view of the fact that, and we understand that the priority for the Carson City Freeway was elevated based on our commitment, you know, to provide a pound of flesh, so to speak, in the form of gas tax revenues. And we appreciate that NDOT was flexible in terms of advancing the project on its list of priorities. The question is whether or not we're being treated as equitably as Washoe County and Clark. And I mean that in terms of there seems to be, and I understand that NDOT is pressed for funding too. I mean, it's a universal problem, and they're trying to you know, offload some of these maintenance responsibilities long-term to local jurisdictions. Can you give us, and you don't have to do it this evening, I don't expect that you've committed these to memory, but a list of other streets that have been relinquished in other jurisdictions, specifically Washoe and Clark, because the question that's constantly asked is, well, when they complete, you know, I-580, is Washoe County going to take care of the road through Pleasant Valley? And I don't know if that's the case, but I would certainly think that that would be analogous to us assuming responsibility for Carson Street.
You bet, Chairwoman. Again, Kent Cooper from Nevada Department of Transportation. Current plans are when 580 opens is Washoe County is supposed to take over old U.S. 395. Basically from Mount Rose Highway all the way through basically to what Bowers Mansion or that area there. Those agreements have not been finalized, so that is our stance right now, but we do not have a signed agreement with Washoe County. I think what we have talked about in the past with these local areas is a little bit different situation in that Washoe County and Clark County have implemented, and you folks are probably well aware of this, what they call the regional road impact fee in Washoe County and the Question 10 funding in Clark County, which initially were $500 per home and then a 50 cent per square foot fee on commercial and industrial space. That was the Clark County deal. Washoe County's is actually quite higher than that. They have raised those in the meantime. And indeed, in my course of time at NDOT, the funding picture has changed dramatically, where it used to be all the state and the federal government funding these roadways in the state of Nevada. Now, if you add the state and the federal government total together, we're less than 50% of the funding picture in Nevada. And obviously, most of that is in Clark County and Washoe County and the fees that they have generated. To me, what Carson City did when they actually stepped up to the plate and dedicated part of your 5 cent gas tax to this project is you put yourself on an equitable basis with them, where a person such as myself can defend to the State Transportation Board that you have indeed contributed and allowed these projects to advance. The road takeovers have, or transfers, or however you want to phrase that, have not been anywhere near where our board wanted them to go. We've discussed this probably for 5 or 10 years in Las Vegas. Indeed, Las Vegas Boulevard, there's very few portions of that we now own or maintain. Tropicana, Flamingo, there have been other ones indeed that the local area has taken over, Paradise Road in Clark County. Some of these transfers have been dictated more by their desire to own and maintain those roads than the financial aspect. Paradise, for instance, they wanted to run the fixed guideway that is there now down that roadway, and we were not being as cooperative, I don't think, as they felt we should be in regards to allowing the way that sits in that roadway now. And if you've been down there, you can see how it runs in the middle of the roadway, and the turn lanes are a little bit, they're not to our standards, quite frankly. Las Vegas Boulevard, same type of deal. They want to put additional stoplights there. They want to control access, and we're pretty strict on those type of activities. And so I think that drove those road transfers more than what you're talking about up here. In my discussion with the director, I can't speak for her or our transportation board, but I believe she is willing to entertain the discussions you talked about here in regards to if Carson City is willing to take on some of those roadways. She would be willing to discuss that a relievance of some of that debt. I haven't been privy to any of those conversations, so I'm a little bit out of order in talking about that, but I know she still would entertain those types of discussions. We have cost estimated an overlay of Carson Street. We have held off on that, knowing the city's plans to do redevelopment, maybe a different plan of action for your downtown corridor there, and be foolish for us to go and overlay that roadway to the tune of many millions of dollars and then have you come in and do whatever plans you have down there. So I think we're holding off on that to reserve that money for that future takeover, so you could just assume that money and then use it as you see fit, whether you see fit to use it as an overlay or to do downtown redevelopment or however the city wants to function in that arena. I know those discussions have been there. I also believe that I can't state this for certain, but when the freeway is complete, there is a desire to redesignate US 50. It would come in from the east and hit the freeway, and US 50 would run on the new freeway alignment to US 50 south of town, and that makes perfect sense. And it makes sense from a truck perspective and a national perspective. You don't want them running down into your downtown core. And as you know, a lot of people, when they're driving, if they're from out of town, they don't have any idea. We see that right now when they come down and we drop them off on US 50 on the east side of town. You know, then they drive all the way down 50 and have caused huge traffic problems for you folks at Solomon and at Roop Street and then at the Carson Street corridor. So I think that redesignation probably will take place once that freeway is complete. So I think we're willing to enter into those type of discussions that you are talking about indeed now. Those will have to happen, obviously, at a level a little bit higher than me and probably at your board level and with the director. Okay. Does that answer it, kind of?
Thank you, Kent. Let me ask you, obviously you have a legal obligation to maintain these streets. It's not you don't have the ability to abandon them.
Correct.
Okay. So, how do you compel Washoe County? I mean, it makes perfect sense to be consistent with what you've done elsewhere to require that they maintain that portion of 395 that is going to become, you know, just an arterial, basically, once I-580 is complete. But how do you compel them to do that?
I'm not sure how that would happen. We've been fairly unsuccessful, quite frankly, in the past. I think we have entered into a lot of discussions with Washoe County and indeed the residents of Pleasant Valley and some of those corridors along there. Those residents want those roadways not to stay the same way they are. Because indeed, early projections, and these are fairly out of date, but when I was doing this work, the freeway would carry approximately probably 40,000, 45,000 cars a day. The old highway would cover about 7,000 cars a day. Well, certainly 7,000 cars a day on that old alignment could drive about 85 miles an hour very easily and function well, and those residents in those corridors don't want that. So we have tried to work with them in regards to what they view, similar to what you view Carson Street being in the future, once you can get that massive amount of traffic off those roadways. I don't think we can compel them to do that. I will add, though, that and Washoe County has taken over, or City of Reno or Sparks has taken over some of the roadways in the similar type of agreements that you're talking about here. But I will tell you, we used to maintain these roadways a lot better than we have, similar to your situation financially. We have basically been maintaining for the last 3 years the interstate routes and some U.S. routes. We have not been putting any maintenance dollars into state routes. So, for instance, the Stewart Streets, the Fifth Streets, the King Streets, Winnie's Lane, those type of things, we have been doing minimal maintenance on those. And I think, unless the transportation funding picture changes dramatically, you're going to see that in the future. So these roadways that we're all used to being fantastically maintained because the state was taking care of them, you're going to see less and less of maintenance on, which is a very unfortunate issue. And as you know, once you start letting them go, they start deteriorating even quicker and we have bigger problems. So from a state perspective, we have not been doing any of the maintenance that we would like to do that we have identified on these roadways that you're talking about in the valley here, any of your state routes. And even the U.S., U.S. 50, you drive from here to Ely now, and you are starting to notice some pretty severe distresses out there. And quite frankly, we don't have the money or the projects out there to maintain those, as you probably don't either.
And of course, in the Las Vegas area, you don't have to contend with snow removal, which is another major expense during a normal snowfall year.
And you bet. And we've known for a long time in the Las Vegas area, Chairwoman, that most of their infrastructure is fairly new. They've grown dramatically, 400,000 in the 80 census to 800,000 to 1.3 million in 2000 to about, 1.9, 2 million now. And so they didn't have to deal with these type of issues, and they're in a much different environment. But they are starting to turn the corner now where their maintenance issues are fairly dramatic, and they're starting to have to deal with some of the things you've had to deal with all along. And so I think Las Vegas is facing up to that now, but it's a very, very serious issue for them. Your climate is much different up here and much more severe with the snow plows and the freeze and thaw cycles and all those type of issues.
I've got a couple of lights here, Kent. Hang on just a second. Commissioner Kroll.
When the Fairview interchange is completed this summer, how difficult is it to direct that no trucks go downtown Carson Street?
The trucking issue, Mayor, is a very difficult issue. It's really guided more by federal law than by state issues. And a good example is Boulder City. Boulder City is trying to get a bypass, as we have been trying to do in Carson City for, 30, 40 years now. And one of the things they're proposing is building a facility that is not a full freeway facility. Former Mayor Texera, the Texera Expressway, and those type of issues. And typically the way the federal law reads, unless you're providing another route that is as good or better than the existing route, you can't demand that those trucks go a different direction. Certainly, I think you could, given the way Fairview is being built, direct trucks to go Fairview to the freeway and use the freeway and keep them off Carson Street, because when it only goes to Highway 50 where it does now, I can't show time savings or cost savings for those interstate truckers. But certainly with it down to Fairview, we could show that. So that would be something I think we could talk about with the city and try to move in that direction. But it's really more of a federal and interstate trucker issue. The other big issue we have, and we're dealing with this in Las Vegas right now, Assemblyman Mo Dennis put a bill forth last session that was an advisory bill, but basically to make trucks use a certain lane on the interstate and those type of activities. And the enforcement issue is really the bigger issue. How am I, as a Nevada Highway Patrol trooper or a Carson City sheriff, going to determine that a truck is a through truck, or is it making a delivery to a gas station on Carson Street, or am I delivering to Walmart? Those type of issues. So really, those are the type of issues I think that you face that are bigger than the ability to dictate which direction they go. As you know, that trucking industry wants to go the quickest and easiest route that they can. They don't want to get in the middle of the city and have to make those left turns and some of those difficult decisions. I think the completion to Fairview and the way you're building Fairview will allow you to make some of those decisions and work with us in regards to directing them the way you want them to go, because I think I can show good cost savings going on that new route.
Well, and the improvements that were made at the intersection were designed, as I recall, specifically to accommodate those turning radiuses.
Absolutely.
Back onto South Carson. And I think that, you know, perhaps the best way of discouraging them from taking Carson Street is to narrow the street pursuant to our redevelopment plan downtown. It's going to be a trucker's nightmare. Commissioner Mallory.
Thank you, Chairwoman. Kent, a couple questions, and then I have a recommendation. One of the questions is, can we get the snowplow and the maintenance figures for all these streets that have been mentioned? Winnie's Lane and College Parkway and all the rest of that stuff, Carson Street, or 50 from Carson Street to the freeway and all the rest of those. And the reason why is I think what we should do is take a look at what the costs are going to be and vis-a-vis what a cash payment might be and see how many years out it goes, and then make a hard decision whether or not some of the things that you mentioned, Kent, about NDOT having trouble maintaining some of these roads like King's Canyon and Winnie's Lane and Ormsby, why would the RTC want to take on that long-term burden if it's going to cost far more than just a cash payment? So I'd like to see that, some sort of an analysis there.
Absolutely, Commissioner Mallory, and working through Patrick or staff or however you want to do it, those figures are certainly available. I think my advice to you is think about what you want from us in regards to that data. The way the three-year figure that Patrick discussed earlier came up really was through our State Transportation Board. They gave us direction under Governor Gwynn to move in this direction, that there were a lot of roadways that we felt weren't state interest roadways anymore, that were really outdated from 40, 50 years ago. They made that initial move. We got practically nowhere over 2 years, and the governor got very frustrated with us. And so they made a further policy decision to try to identify those costs for a three-year time frame. Certainly, we have those costs. We can run those costs out in as long a time frame as you want to look at. So the 3 years was really an arbitrary figure. They decided that they would move forward, or wanted us to move forward with a package where we could offer, in exchange for the roadways, the cost that we incur to maintain for a three-year time frame. That could be a part of the package deal if cities or counties were willing to take over those roadways. So it was really kind of an arbitrary decision on the 3 years. Bill Hoffman with our maintenance division certainly has those that type of data on all those roadways, and so you probably just need to calculate in your minds what type of data you want from us.
Because I'd really like to see what the break-even year would be on that, how many years out. And I also, Ken, and you know this as well as I do, I was with you guys on a lot of those discussions in Washoe County. We went to the RTC, no dice. We went to Washoe County. Well, we really don't want that road through Pleasant Valley either. If we take it, we're going to require NDOT to pay multiple millions of dollars for drainage and some other things, Kent. And there was a lot of conversations there. And when I was with NDOT, it was like we have to get some salespeople on the job here to try to encourage people to take the road. And then there was some combination of roads. McCarran, I believe, was one of them, and some others there in Reno. They said, well, if we take that road, then maybe you'll take some other roads that we have here. And I don't know whether it comes out, because I haven't been there in a couple months, but I don't know whether it comes out as a zero-sum game or not to NDOT if you begin trading all of these things. And I think we want to be careful here that we don't get into something like that for Carson City.
Commissioner Mallory, I think that's a prudent course of action. I think that's the type of analysis the city needs to do. Quite frankly, so you know where NDOT's coming from, what we do well is the higher order, higher facilities, the expressways and the freeways. Indeed, we are looking at McCarran Boulevard, and that what probably will be in NDOT control. Right now, it's just basically the northern part, Interstate 80, on the northern loop to Interstate 80. We are working at taking over all of the McCarran loop, but we're getting rid of 4th Street and Audi and a lot of those other old roadways that were the old highway through the Reno area. We're in discussions with City of Las Vegas to take over Summerlin Parkway, and then City of Las Vegas take over a lot of those local roadways. So what we're trying to do is go to the roadways that we do real well, that indeed carry most of the traffic, and trying to get the roadways that you folks deal better with and really want to have control over, because you can deal with the access issues and the local issues.
Can we also get, if it's not too burdensome, I mean, I'm sure you have a list of all the current relinquishments that have been approved. Could you get a list to staff so they can share that with my constituents when they call?
Absolutely. If we could get a request, Patrick, from you for that data, that's kind of out of my area, you know?
Yeah, we do have the standard three, you know, here are the roads, here's 3 years expected cost.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about the roads that they're requesting we accept. I'm talking about other relinquishments in the state of Nevada.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, and we actually have started.
It has to do with the equity issue that
I mentioned. And I have talked to, for example, Sparks that did that, but we'll get the rest of them, too. I know Sparks recently went through it with you. And so I personally spoke to them about their experience with NDOT, what they've gone through, and how they were compensated, and their motivations.
Okay.
And if you would request an updated list, because that probably has changed, still in discussion, some of them have happened, but be very specific in what you want. I want a statewide list of relinquishments over the past however long you want. That data is readily available. Should be very simple to provide.
How long? Well, it began when Governor Gwynne was in office.
I think if you went back 10 years, you'd probably be safe.
All right, Kent, thank you very much. Any other questions from members of the commission?
You did a good job, Kent.
Any other questions by members of the audience? Kent, thank you very much.
Patrick, when you submit that request to them, maybe you could also ask them for the percentage breakdown by county as to what counties, you know, what the county participation has been in roads and what the state participation has been in. Because I know, you know, we get asked all the time, you know, Carson City is paying more than other counties. I think if we saw that on a percentage basis, we could have kind of an idea.
Per capita?
Per capita is fine.
Okay.
You know, some ways so that we can evaluate the level of commitment we have here as how it compares to the level of commitment in take Clark and Washoe, for example, or, and, you know, maybe you don't have to go to all the counties, but just Clark, Washoe, and Lyon and Douglas.
And already NDOT and their state facts and figures just came out as a nice little chart in there, so we know you have the data saying, you know, this is how many miles of roads are in each county that the state owns versus how many miles the county owns or owned by somebody other than the state, and additionally how much traffic there is on the state roads versus the county roads too. So I think incorporating that as well would be helpful.
That's great. Kent, before you leave, I think we have another question for you. Yes, please.
Yeah, Dave Unks again, resident of Carson City. One thing occurred to me I agree with the Commissioner Carpenter, it's accepting these roads from the state could be an added burden, obviously, to the city. Say, for instance, if the Phase 2B were funded by the stimulus package at no cost to NDOT, would that funding change reflect any of the, in other words, result in less streets having to be turned over to the city? In other words, could we get a break on taking over some of this maintenance because none of their funds were expended on 2B, Phase 2B?
Well, and as NDOT, I mean, right now we're in an economic slump, but as NDOT, you know, relinquishes these streets, I mean, Kent, you indicated that, you know, what do you, NDOT funds less, what is 50% of what it used to fund or something, or at least that's its objective. You know, maybe, you know, we can share in some of your gas tax revenues. I mean, there needs to be a shifting of revenue to compensate the local jurisdictions for taking over these streets. I know that's a decision that you're not able to make here this evening, but we need to, you know, think outside the box and take a look at all possibilities and options.
I'm assuming the department would be willing to enter into discussions on any of those issues with you.
I appreciate that very much, Kent. All right. Any other questions? Thank you, Kent. Thank you, Dennis. Dennis, we'll see you next month. All right. That was informational only. So now we'll move on to item G4, information regarding a recent transit survey. Dan.
I'll just get through this quickly. Although this is a wonderful, important thing because it tells us all about who's riding our bus service, and I have to quickly say thank you to another city staff member, Claudia Saavedra, who arranged for all the free labor, so we didn't spend a dime except for the
pens. This is through alternative sentencing?
Yes, from alternative sentencing, and we got some wonderful people, and every single bus was ridden on for an entire day. It was 2 weeks ago yesterday, which is a phenomenal turnaround time, seeing that we had everything processed, thanks to Dan and some other staff. We had everything processed and a report done within a week to get it out to you. So it's very timely, at least. And I'm just going to go back to the table and point out some interesting things. If you look at the age of our riders, it's pretty well distributed. Pretty good split between men and women. 17% of our riders are of Hispanic or Latino origin. And see, there's a significant amount of people that are on our Jack bus system that are not licensed drivers, 57%. And even if you discount those ones that are age 15 and under, that's still a very large percentage of our riders that are not licensed drivers. If you look at household income, the numbers are relatively consistent with what we saw before. We've compared here with 15 months previous when we did the same kind of survey. Over 60% of our riders are from households where the total household income was less than $20,000. And over 80% are from households where the total household income is under $30,000. And finally on this page, 44% of our riders are from households with no vehicles available at all, whether or not they had a driver's license, there were no vehicles available. And these kind of questions that we ask are related to, you know, what we call the transit dependence. Age doesn't make you transit dependent per se, but having no vehicle available, being very low income, not having a driver's license, those are the things that indicate your dependence upon the transit service provided. Table two, we have a good variety of reasons why people are out there going. If you look at the destination, we have people going to work, school, shopping, and significantly there was a difference in the amount of people going to work. I think if we'd taken this, you know, maybe 4 or 5 months earlier when the economy wasn't quite as bad, you might have hopefully seen more people going to work, but we had a significant drop off in how many people were going to work. But we've had a significant increase in people going to school. I was actually out there for a few of these runs that day, and there were a lot of people, for example, going to high school, even though we don't directly go there. The frequency of use, most of the riders of the Jack system are relatively frequent users. More than almost 60% are going at least three times a week, and we do have a good cross section of how long you've been riding. Some have only been riding for less than a month, but have been there for a while. there are a lot of people who do transfer between routes, and we do have some transferring with the RTC inner city. Now we have Blue Go Route 21X that goes over Spooner. We didn't have that 15 months ago. And there's a substantial increase in the amount transferring with DART, which as 15 months ago, we were still going all the way down to the Walmart in Douglas County. Now we do transfers at Costco. There are a significant amount of people to transfer. On average, we have we did a three-day survey, and we had between 22 and 28 people every day transferring, and that's going to be an unfortunate loss when we only have DART coming there three times a day instead of 10 times a day. The amount of people that, you know, the way people get to the bus, still a substantial amount. Did walk 78%, but we did triple the amount of people coming on their bicycles now that we have bike racks on their bicycles. There was a significant drop in the amount of people paying with cash. And the major difference is that now we have that senior free pass, which obviously went from nothing to about 20% of our riders. Benefit to both us financially as running the system because we're getting money from the Division of Aging Services, the state, and also a benefit to our community as a whole because the senior citizens are riding for free. Most people are taking a round trip, good distribution during the day. And finally, we did once again ask if there was any desire for service expansion. Consistent, approximately 95% expressed of the people on the bus did express a desire for expansion. There was a tie between the two that we hear most often, more areas of the city and later in the evening, are both two common requests that we get. There was actually, and there is also a request for other services as well, but those are the first two. We try to categorize where they would like service expanded to. Most of the service requests are within Carson City. There's, you know, Carson City General, but we do get the specific ones. But we also get requests to go to Lyon County, Douglas County, and Reno as well. We asked people if it went longer, how long it would go. There was a variety of answers to expand beyond the 6:30 time. And then at the bottom, there was a section that said, what other comments do you have? And people were allowed to write whatever they liked. And when we grouped them, we actually had, a fair number of compliments, but in general and specifically, and indeed a request for more or better service, even though there was already an opportunity specifically to ask for more and better service. They repeated before, the only thing we put in here was an example of our survey forms. We did them in English and in Spanish, and we had them filled out both ways. And our survey sample rate, we also know the ridership that day, we got just over 35% of the people to complete a survey.
Patrick, what are our ridership numbers continuing to increase?
Actually, we were almost exactly at 10,000. We were within about 3 people of 10,000 on the fixed route system last month. Of course, February is a short month.
Sure.
At our peak, we were just over 11,000 in fall. Our ridership chart, I'm sorry, not one with us, but we had about a 4 to 5 month period that coincided with the worst of the fuel prices, frankly. It really spiked for about a 5 month period over 11,000. Now we're at about 10,000, but we have had that drop off in the work, unfortunately, the journey to work trips.
Sure.
And we have had other good things, but generally speaking, we just looked at our 2006, 7, and 8 performance numbers as a whole for a different effort, and we found that our average monthly ridership increased in 2006 was about 6,900, in 2007 it was 9,700, and in 2008 it was 11,700, and our operating costs, we actually were able to reduce them slightly from 2007 to 2008. So all of our measures of effectiveness have actually improved.
So actually, we've plateaued at least currently.
Well,
irrespective
of
economic conditions.
I don't really want gas prices to be $4.50 a gallon either, because it didn't help us in our fuel budget.
I understand.
either.
But at some point, you're going to reach your level off, and the only way to increase ridership is by expanding the service or increasing the hours.
Yes, exactly. Even when the federal government, for example, if you live in one of those big MPOs, they give you money called congestion mitigation air quality funds, and they let you introduce bus service, and they always do it for a three-year period because it takes that long to really establish a transit service. And lo and behold, here we are at 3 years and 5 months in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So what we're doing is statistically correct, right? All right.
At what point do we introduce advertising?
Russ is
inside or questions. Outside the bus?
Both.
Next week, Wednesday.
Okay.
All right. We need to reduce that Carson City subsidy. All right. Any other questions for Patrick? Any questions by members of the audience, Dave? All right. Let's move on to the next item, which is item H1, the community CDBG application. Patrick?
Just very briefly, we told you last month that we'd put in for community development block grant funding. The recommendation of the advisory work group, I believe it was called, to the Board of Supervisors was to provide us with $171,576. And also that that the proposed project, the sidewalk project, would also receive funds from the stimulus program, our stimulus bill as well. There is CDBG money for that as well. We expect approximately $100,000 of additional funds, but that is still being ironed out like many other stimulus programs across the country. So we expect a total of about $280,000. But because of the varying timelines between the original CDBG money and the stimulus CDBG money and the various reporting requirements as well, we will actually likely have to implement these as separate contracts to put on the street. But we'll design it together, and we'll get those on the street. For sure, the CDBG money, the 171, will be available following July 1st, and we have yet to receive the actual timeline for the stimulus funds. But we'll take whatever we can get, and we will do the most we can with the funds available.
And the committee's recommendation was to provide you of the public improvement project portion of the CDBG money allocation, provide you with any additional funds that might be received through the usual allocation of CDBG money.
Exactly.
So you must have made a great and memorable presentation, Patrick.
As always.
Okay.
Now, actually, I finished in second place behind another very
worthy project.
Very worthy project.
All right. Any questions for Patrick on this item? All right. Thank you, Patrick. We'll move on to the next item, item H2, which is the, is there a formal report? You've provided us with a new map, new improved version of the JAC map.
Here's first of all the Washoe RTC intercity map and schedule. Previously, we had discussed the fact that there was a proposed decrease in service, and I just wanted to take this opportunity for public outreach to say yes, indeed, it did come to pass. And as you can see, is the effective date on top as of March 1st. There are indeed now 5 round trips on weekdays instead of 9 round trips, and the map and schedule are provided here. They're also available at the on the RTC website, rtcwashoe.com, and I've also attached the revised JAC transit system map that displays the Route 21X that goes over Spooner Summit. We made only very small scheduling changes to improve our schedule performance, but none of the routes of the JAC service changed. We were out of maps, and we took the opportunity to improve the schedule slightly, add 21X on there, and a couple of fine pictures taken by my friend Keith Pearson. No photographer was paid anything. Keith took a fine shot. So that is all I have for that one.
Is this an ad?
What? It's only an ad for Ride the JAC bus system. And all pictures were taken in Carson City.
Now, with the proposed reduction in service from DART, are we going to have to go back and revise this again?
No. DART does not appear on this schedule at all.
Well, I'm kind of wondering why. This is a JAC, obviously. For JAC service. Where we interact with other services, it would be nice to provide that information.
It's all about timing. And the last time we did the map, was when DART was in a state of flux, and fortunately, as we were doing this map, DART was also in a state of flux. And as this map was being prepared, we were not aware, we were not certain if DART was going to exist at all, frankly. And now there will be three trips a day. But we just learned that recently.
Okay. So how are we going to convey that information to our jack riders?
Oh, well, we have the proposed change of 10 round trips to 3 round trips has been advertised by DART, of course, but we have also posted it on our routes as well to inform people of the proposed change that's out there. And if it becomes indeed a decision to proceed with that after the comment period, then we will once again be notifying jack riders of the impact of what DART is doing.
Patrick, do we typically post notices in the shelters as well?
Yes. We have shelters and then on the vehicles as a primary method as well.
Okay. All right. Looks good.
Oh, and
nice effective piece.
And as long as I'm here, as everybody knows, Route 21X is up and running over Spooner Summit. We have improved route performance there, and because of the change of the DART service, right now there's the Spooner service 21X. There's also Kingsbury Express, which is called 20X. John Ando, who you've all met from Blue Go staff, is entertaining a proposal to instead of running 21X and 20X as separate routes, to interline them to give people the opportunity to travel. If you were at Costco, to travel from Costco either over Spooner or south into Douglas County. That's something that I have discussed with Mr. Ando and that we are reviewing together. And if anything comes to fruition, we'll be back here to tell you about it.
Okay, good. Any questions for Patrick? All right, thank you, Patrick. Next item is H3, which is Project Status Report. Harvey is not with us this evening, but if you have any questions regarding anything contained in this report, please address them to Patrick or to our deputy director.
Yeah, I would handle that. The only three projects I want to highlight: Appian Way, moving right along. We have been heavily impacted out there by the weather. It's a very wet area. Stewart Street realignment. Anybody's driven through there, utility works is well underway. And then Curry Street. We're excited that we're planning to take that out to bid next week and start construction in May.
The one comment I had from somebody, a frustrated member of the traveling public, was that they were a little concerned that I think it's Roventini, which is just to the south of Albertsons, between the Ribeiro development and Albertsons, is consistently closed with no work going on. There are no open trenches. There doesn't seem to be any logical reason why people are not permitted to travel that section of the roadway. And I'm just wondering if we need to contact the Ribeiro folks and if they've ceased with their, you know, development activities, that when they don't have any open trenches or any reason from a safety standpoint to have that road closed, it needs to be reopened.
That comment is timely. We got a complaint on that today.
Oh, okay.
And
all right.
So we are addressing it.
Okay, terrific. All right. Thanks very much. Any questions regarding this item? All right. Last item of the evening is agenda item H4, having to do with the Public Works activity report. Any questions regarding what we've been up to for the last month? Any member? Okay, I want to defer to members of the audience because Dave looks like he's drifting off, and he's the only member of the public present at the moment. Okay, seeing no questions from members of the commission, future agenda items, Patrick. Update on the drainage issue at Baker in Colorado.
Oh, yes. Oh, well.
You want to give us an update tonight or just?
Well, we're getting the surveying done, and we're looking at two drain inlets, one on each side of the road to keep the water out of there, and of course to provide better pedestrian access across there. We have numerous staff changes and a lot of different projects in the pipeline, but okay, we're working that one in as well.
At the last meeting, Commissioner Kroll had a number of items that he had requested appear on some future agenda. Bob, would you like to? One had to do with the gas tax. The other with pending contracts regarding the relinquishment of Carson Street.
Right.
And what were the others? That's the only one. Okay, all right. You want to elaborate on that to give staff direction, Bob?
No, I found it. I got most of the information tonight. I mean, I just want to digest what we heard tonight and maybe kind of have some offline conversations. But I thought it was very helpful to go through what we did tonight. And I apologize if we dragged the meeting out. But I think it's beneficial to have a refresher on this, particularly for me, because there's a lot of things I didn't realize was happening. And I think for, you know, come July here, we're going to be, have to make some decisions pretty quick, I think. So, anyway, but thank you. I only had one other thing that I wanted, and this is, I think I talked to you about this, Patrick. This is way out, but are we ever going to get the sidewalk fixed on 4th Street next to the legislature so I can stop getting people?
Is this right by,
legislators telling
to
me,
push
you know,
our local
this
business?
This is a disaster area. There.
By the coffee shop there on the north side?
Yeah,
of,
on 4th Street. I mean, yes. I get that every day I go down there. Shelley gets the constituent calls. I get the call from the legislators saying, great town, Bob.
Actually, we are right now pursuing there are some trees that need to be removed that are affecting not only the ability to have the current sidewalk or any new sidewalk and also some sewer laterals. We're actually going to tackle that one this month. We're supposed to, initially the trees. There are trees on the north side of 4th Street, on the west side, of Curry between 4th and 5th, and on the north side of 5th Street at the northeast corner of Curry and 5th. There are a total of 6 very large trees that are destroying a lot of public-owned facilities. Those 6 large trees need to come out, and then the sidewalk go back in.
Are they in the public right-of-way, Patrick, these
yes.
trees?
Okay. Yes, they are. But we are still going to do an outreach in the neighboring properties to inform them of what we're up to, of course. They might hear this and feel free to call us at 887-2355, and we'll tell you more information. But we're right now getting all the bids and quotes for the cost of first the trees and then putting the concrete back in. But we have received concerns about that as well, and we're already on the path.
Thank you, Patrick.
Yes, Russ.
I would like us to chat in the future about us having one of our board members head up this the NDOT road transfer negotiations. I think that we need to have somebody from our board working directly with NDOT on that and make that, you know, something that we get updated on a fairly regular basis, because what Jim was saying tonight is really important about the getting the statistics and the amount of work that they do, the snow plowing and how much it's going to cost to, you know, on a regular maintenance schedule to you know, maintain these roads, etc. And I really hate to see us bite off more than we can chew. Perhaps we can, you know, maybe take one road now and one road later or something like that. But I think that we should have somebody on our board.
Well, I used to participate in those discussions. I don't know why, and I would be happy to attend those future meetings. And I, you know, either Bob as our mayor could attend, or Jim Mallory as a former NDOT insider could participate in those discussions and negotiations. But I agree, we need to have a presence as members of RTC in this process.
I would think at the very least next meeting we can bring back to you a status of where we are and why the decisions have been made to date, and then get some direction from you as to where we want to go in the future and who would like to participate in a committee type format.
Okay, well, I would appreciate that. I don't think that, frankly, looking at the status report, we're much further than we were when I was participating in these negotiations. So, but I do feel, and we can delay a decision, I presume that this no meetings will take place between our negotiating team and NDOT, because there are a lot of things we need to take into consideration, that the extrapolated, you know, list of costs that we would be assuming if we assume ownership of new streets, taking a look at perhaps requesting that NDOT relinquish some of their gas tax. I mean, what we need is not a one-shot infusion of capital. We need ongoing revenue to enable us to maintain these streets in good repair. And so I want to, we have never, to my knowledge, approached NDOT about them relinquishing some of their gas tax money to enable us to do that. But I think it's definitely something we need to approach them with.
It's a brilliant idea.
Oh, at least.
Just a couple other things, yes. Trans-related for future agenda. Next month, I want to give you an update on where we are with our transit fleet as far as ordering that new vehicle and receiving the other two, because even once we get them, there's license, registration, painting, on-spot chains, radios, destination signs.
Advertising.
Advertising. There's a lot that we go through, so they won't actually be on the street next Wednesday. They'll just be, you know, white shell sitting in our yard, but we'll continue on to that. And I also want to just inform you what we will be disposing of as well. We've got a bus that's over 200,000 miles on it and well beyond its useful life that's out on the road today. We didn't even bother putting a bike rack on that one. but there's, where we are in the status of the fleet. And then very importantly, just so everyone's aware, the contract that we have with MV Transportation, Inc. expires September 30th of this year. And now is the time, not September 30th, to figure out where we will be after September 30th. We do have an option right now for up to a two-year extension on the current contract, and without any major scope changes, and we don't desire any major scope changes. So right now I am in negotiations with the Vice President of MV Transportation, and tomorrow I expect to have a proposal on my desk from him, and undoubtedly they will try for the 2 years, because why wouldn't they? Because after that 2 years is up, after the next extension is up, we will have to go to bid, which is something that generally contractors like this fear. So hopefully by the next time we have a meeting here, I will come back to you with a proposal for extension, depending on how it goes with them and what I get tomorrow.
Well, under the terms of the contract, if there are no changes in scope, do they have a unilateral right to exercise that option?
It is our option of whether or not we want to extend. So, but because there will be no major, if you did a major scope change, you'd have to take it out to bid. So, the only things that are really are negotiable are the length of the extension up to 2 years per the original contract, and the amount of cost on a per revenue hour basis, which is how we're currently billed. So. I very much expect to see a proposal for a two-year extension to lock us in as long as they can, and the only question is money. How much are they going to be looking for? And we've made them very much aware of our current status and dropped more than hints. So we shall see, but I hope to bring that back to you next month.
And, Patrick, there are a variety of other vendors that we could solicit bids from if we aren't able to negotiate an extension.
There are certainly other capable vendors nationally.
Okay, well, this is a very competitive market for everything. So, okay, thank you. Any other comments by members of the commission? If not, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
What time is it?
So moved. To adjourn. I assume I have a second?
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone.